77th meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council. My name is John Weingard. I live in Surgeonsville in Hunterdon County.
Jack Schreier, I'm the Morris County Freeholder.
Janice Kovach, town of Clinton, Hunterdon County.
Eric Peterson, Hunterdon County Freeholder.
Mimi Les, Precipiny, Morris County.
Bill Conger, Mayor of Chester Township.
Tim Dillingham, I'm a public member of the Mercer County.
Kurt Olsted, public member of Chester Township.
Tracy Carluccio, public representative of Hunterdon County.
And on the phone we have?
Tisha Way, Passaic County Freeholder.
And Scott Whitenack, public member of Morristown.
Good morning. We have a quorum, and this meeting has been advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. And all who wish, please rise for pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have in our packets the minutes from the August 21st meeting. Is there a motion on the minutes?
I'll move the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Packer, any comments, corrections, questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Aye.
The minutes are passed. The only thing I would note in my report, just for the record, is this is our first meeting since the regional master plan the council adopted became effective, I guess is the right word, with the governor's decision to let the minutes of the meeting stand and the plan therefore takes effect as adopted by the council. As everyone knows, the governor also signed an executive order that with a number of provisions all related to implementation of the Highlands Plan. And the official effective date of the plan is September 8th, Monday after the Friday press conference. And most members of the council were at that press conference, even though we were all invited about 12 hours beforehand. But it's a very nice event. And the governor was particularly complimentary to some extent to the council, but particularly to the staff. And, as well as the public, who have given comments on this throughout the process. Do any other members have comments, items that would like to report on this time? Can we turn to the executive director's report?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to start by introducing our financial consultant to you, because this is the first meeting that he's attended. Greg Delapia, if you wouldn't mind standing so that everybody can see you. Greg will be speaking perhaps later when our treasurer talks about the budget. Greg has a considerable amount of municipal and state experience and has been assisted us in getting ready for the audit and in doing other things to automate our system and to make us more efficient with the handling of finances here. So we're very glad to have him on board. Okay, in terms of my report today, some of this was covered by the Chair, the fact that we have the RMP now officially effective as of September 8th, and I want to let you know that we did then remove the under-governor review part of the RMP so that the RMP was up on the website. It was in fact up on the website as of the 5th, without we took the review time off that at that point in time. We also posted to the website the Governor's press release and Executive Order 114. Because the plan became effective September 8th, we now move into the process of printing the plan up. And we'll speak about that a little later during the meeting. We did send, though, all municipalities and counties in the entire region a CD of the Regional Master Plan, copies of the executive order, the council resolution on adoption of the regional master plan dated July 17th, and information on initial assessment grants and information on basic and full conformance. We posted those out on the Tuesday, so that would be September 9th. And that is because we don't want towns to wait till they have a hard copy, because it's going to be some time before we're able to send that out. But so that they can always, of course, go to the website to see it, but that they would always also have a CD so that they could start this next phase of the implementation of the regional master plan.
Can I just ask you a question? You said you sent stuff out to every town?
Every town and every county.
You mailed it to?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, in terms of, we also have put up all the technical reports at this stage. Now, we created a schedule for posting all the items that we have to get up onto the website. It does take a lot of time. It takes a lot of staff time to format the documents, to load them, and then to post them. Our staff member who was doing this work unfortunately left us a month or so ago. I think it was in the month of July. So we've had to give that to another member of staff to do along with their other duties. And during that, we also have to post agendas, WQMP reviews, public comments. And so yesterday we posted the 2006 public comments, and this morning we posted the 2007/2008 public comments. So at this stage, the RMP is up, the technical documents are up, the plan conformance guidelines are also posted, and all the comments are posted. So it did take us a little bit of time to get all of that done. WQMP reviews coordination with NJDEP. We did talk about how to proceed, given that the counties are taking over the new WMP process for DEP. We had committed to this council that we would get out a template/checklist of the WQMP process, which is similar to what you received in your packet today on the different applications that are before us. So we sent that template down to DEP so that they can instruct the counties the bar that they have to reach in terms of being deemed, in terms of getting approval for the WQMP. So that did go down. A couple of other things to go through with you. The first matter I'd like to bring you up to date on is Council on Affordable Housing. You're all aware that EO 114 somewhat changed how we have to work, and we have to speed things up to a large degree because of EO 114. The executive order set forth that in terms of COA, EO 114 ordered that the Highlands Council shall work in cooperation with COA, DEP and DCA to A, review COA's third round projections for consistency with the Highlands Plan and assist COA in developing adjusted growth projections within the Highlands region consistent with the Highlands Plan to be utilised by municipalities that conform to the plan. We have to create realistic opportunities for municipalities to address the actual growth share obligation resulting from residential and non-residential development between January 1st, 2004 and December 31st, 2018 in the Highlands region based on a growth share methodology under which affordable housing must be built when growth occurs. And that includes the obligation already accrued to date, and according to COA, that's some 3,000 units. We have to ensure that municipalities that voluntarily conform to the Highlands Plan support redevelopment and development pursuant to the plan to maximise affordable housing opportunities while preserving critical environmental resources. Identify sites and opportunities for affordable housing within the region, and this is to take care of that realistic opportunity for at least 20% affordable housing set asides in all new residential developments. We have to identify additional sites, opportunities and funding sources for 100% affordable housing developments that could aid in addressing the Highlands Council's regional affordable housing needs while preserving its critical resources. Coordinate the deadlines for revision of municipal master plans and third round fair share plans to be in conformance with both the Highlands Act and the Fair Housing Act, including reasonable extensions of deadlines. Preserve scarce land, water and sewer resources and dedicate these resources on a priority basis for the production of affordable housing consistent with the regional plan and providing priority review for proposed affordable housing projects. And finally, provide that conforming municipalities adopt housing elements and fair share plans consistent with the Fair Housing Act. So some of this will require us to speed up our process to a certain extent, because in designing basic plan conformance, we had left certain elements to full conformance, that now really have to move to the front of the queue. So in order to do this, we have two things that I want to bring you up to date on. One is that we have put out an RFQ to look for a consultant to assist us in doing this work for COA, and also consistent with A500, which you know was adopted or signed the same day as we signed the regional master plan. So there's some new work that has to be done in terms of A500 as well. In terms of A500, we have to establish a regional system for allocation of affordable housing. So we're allowed to do similar to the old RCA methods. We can do that on a regional level. So we at least have to look for where those opportunities exist and how we're going to do that. We also have to take another look at our build-out for two reasons. We've done the regional build-out analysis, but we did it for a full build-out analysis, whereas COA looks at that 2018 threshold. So we need to take a look at our build-out from that perspective. And then as we work with local build-out on the municipalities, that's when we'll be able to work with COA on adjusted projections at a local level. So we put out an RFQ for a firm that would assist us in reviewing those projections and to be consistent with the regional master plan, and looking at mechanisms such as the affordable housing elements that were laid forth in the EO, such as identifying those additional sites, opportunities and funding for the 100% affordable housing. The scope of services would be that the consultant would assist the Highlands Council in implementing the goals, policies and objectives of the regional master plan with respect to provision of affordable housing in the Highlands region, assist us in implementing EO 114, and assist us in implementing A500, basically. We'll bring more back to you when we have responses for that, for you to take the final action on that.
Mr. Chairman, I have two questions before we go off that. It has come to my attention that there seems to be a lack of clarity in the executive order regarding the Highlands and COA for municipalities in the planning area that do not conform, but municipalities that might perhaps consider conforming in that interim period between now and December 31st, when the COA rules should be adopted for the third round. Do you have any further clarification on that?
Yes, I hope so. I'll do my best. We do understand the concerns, and we heard very quickly from many towns. We heard from their professionals, or we heard from the towns themselves, from mayors. And in fact, Tom and I were in the borough of Wanacue on Monday, the eve of Monday, September the 8th, and we're already being asked, you know, to have the answers to EO 114, which have not yet been fully thrashed out. So what we did is we contacted COA and asked to set up a meeting so we could begin these discussions, because we realise the towns need direction soon, very soon. Because the concern is, if there's a reasonable extension of deadlines, what does that mean? And the other concern is, when do we have to take action by to make our minds up on these issues? In terms of those towns that do not conform to the regional master plan, they do not fall under our protection, so to speak. Therefore, they will be treated similarly to the rest of the state in terms of COA. If a town conforms, then their numbers will be adjusted to be consistent with the regional master plan, and they will get this reasonable extension of timeline. So we had a conference call with Council on Affordable Housing, and we expressed the concerns voiced by the towns, and above all their concern that this is very time sensitive, and they didn't want to spend more money preparing plans for December of this year if they were going to get an extension. They wanted to know what that extension was and what does the EO mean. We in working with COA, they have a meeting next Monday, it's coming Monday. So we suggested that if it was possible that we could reach agreement, that we would discuss it with you today, and that they would discuss it with the Council on Affordable Housing on Monday. And if you agreed with the approach and the Council on Affordable Housing agreed on the approach, we would send a joint letter out to all municipalities, and that could be done as early as next week, and the questions could be answered. So what the letter we proposed to send out would basically, first of all, explain to municipalities that it was about Executive Order 114. It would explain that we are required to review COA's third round growth projections for consistency with the regional master plan, and that it also required the coordination of deadlines. And what we worked out with COA is that if you are in agreement, and that their council is in agreement, that any of the 88 municipalities in the Highlands region may be granted an extension of time beyond COA's December 31st, 2008 deadline if they do the following. This is the process. First of all, the municipality would be required to submit a notice of intent to conform to the Highlands Regional Master Plan, and that would be sent to the Highlands Council in accordance with the plan conformance guidelines. Secondly, the municipal resolution that is required for a notice of intent would specify that a municipality intends to submit a petition for plan conformance on or before December 8th, 2009. What we did is we used the statutory framework in the Highlands Act, which gave municipalities 15 months time frame within which they had to submit to us their conforming petitions. So it seemed logical to use that time frame for the planning area municipalities as well. They didn't have a time frame in the Act.
So in December
of 2009.
Oh.
No, maybe.
I thought that's
No, I don't think Highlands Council staff would be particularly pleased with that either. For municipalities with lands in the planning area, that municipal resolution required for the notice of intent would specify whether the municipality intended to submit a petition for plan conformance for lands in the planning area. We do affirm, though, that the expression of intent does not limit the municipality's right under the Highlands Act to choose not to conform to the Highlands Regional Master Plan for the planning area. The municipal resolution would also specify that the municipality intended to submit the petition for plan conformance that fulfills the requirements in the Regional Master Plan that conforming municipalities shall, consistent with the Fair Housing Act, either petition COA for a substantive certification of its housing element and ordinances, or institute an action for declaratory judgment granting it repose in the Superior Court. The municipality would submit a request for a waiver to COA that includes that notice of intent, and where a municipality has submitted the request for waiver in accordance with these requirements, COA would grant a waiver of the December 31st, 2008 deadline, specifying that the new deadline for submitting the housing element and fair share plan would be December 8th, 2009.
The notice of intent is not binding.
Correct. Correct.
For the planning area lands.
So what happens if a town files the notice of intent and so they kind of get an extension? And then they change their mind, they're not going to conform.
Then they're obliged to, like the rest of the state, comply in that manner. They're no longer protected by
punishment retroactively.
It's a right they have under the Highlands Act to not conform in the planning area, and we can't extinguish that right.
But they'd be given a COA extension. There's no punishment for having received that extension, and they're not.
They would fall under the COA growth share numbers that COA has created.
Correct.
Of the state.
Correct.
Which may be different in many cases from the adjusted ones.
Correct.
Now, what if there are a lot of towns who have jointly filed legal procedures with COA? Can they participate in this? I mean,
it's designed for all 88 municipalities in the region.
So whatever the legal standing or relationship is,
they have the right to.
I have one more question of lesser import. Let's see, about COA? Regarding COA. Regarding the RCAs, there's an exception for Highlands municipalities in the RCA prohibition, isn't that correct?
That is correct, and that's what I was referring to earlier, that regional approach to looking at affordable housing. And again, that was part of why we were putting out that RFQ, because we need a specialist to assist the staff a co-specialist, somebody who really knows this work, to assist us in looking at that approach as well.
So it's still an open question.
Yes, but we're planning to address that under our obligation under A500.
How long do we have this memorandum
of
understanding?
We are required by EO 114 to have a memorandum of understanding in place in 60 days. We look on this as the first piece and the most critical piece. So we thought if we focused on this first, because this is sort of the burning question for all the municipalities, we would then, this would be incorporated into the MOU, and we would have to have the MOU ready by the end of October to be compliant, and so we have a meeting then to be compliant with EO 114.
I guess the question for today is whether we're all comfortable with the approach I've been outlined for next week, that we would entrust her to co-sign a letter with COA that would go to the municipality and outline the procedure she just outlined.
Copies of that?
We didn't do copies of it because it hadn't gone to COA yet either, but I can send something out to the council members advising them of the elements of the letter, but COA has not had the opportunity to discuss these. It's just been their staff with our staff.
Your questions on this issue or concerns about that approach?
Sounds reasonable.
Okay. Thank you. Next matter I wanted to bring you up to date on is our plan endorsement application for lands in the planning area to the State Planning Commission. As of August 18th, we sent to the Office of Smart Growth our request to start the process of plan endorsement. They actually don't have guidelines for a special resource area, because we have the honour of being the one and only first special resource area under the 2001 State Development and Redevelopment Plan. But what we did is we know their guidelines for plan endorsements, so we're sort of following those. In order to make our submission to them something that would assist them in looking at us in terms of consistency, what we did is we took a template that they had sent us. They sent us comments when we released the 2006 Regional Master Plan. We used the same template then to give back to them to show how we believe we are consistent with the State Development and Redevelopment Plan. So for each goal set forth in the State Plan, we show the GPO's goals, policies and objectives that comply, we believe, with each goal within the State Plan. We did respond, of course, to the comments received from the Office of Smart Growth and have worked with them, as we have with other state agencies, during the process of preparing the Regional Master Plan. Yesterday, we went down to the State Planning Commission and we presented before the Commission. What we did there is we did a presentation that spoke of the history of the Highlands in terms of the designation as a special resource area, the task force and its work, the Highlands Act, and then the Highlands Regional Master Plan. We spoke about the very open and transparent process that has ensued under your guidance in terms of development of the Regional Master Plan. We emphasized to the State Planning Commission the interagency cooperation and coordination in accordance with Section 9 of the Highlands Act that has been pursued throughout this whole process. We think that is extremely important because sitting on the State Planning Commission, you have a representative for Department of Environmental Protection, one for Department of Transportation, one for Department of Agriculture, and of course the Office of Smart Growth working for the State Planning Commission. And what we wanted to be very clear on is that the plan should not be a surprise to any of those representatives on the State Planning Commission, because at every step of this process, as we worked with you to work on the different revised elements, we shared that with all those agencies and took their comments into consideration as well. If they had issues, we had meetings to resolve those issues and chart the path forward. So in other words, the plan that we have today has gone through a process of coordination with each of those state members sitting on the State Planning Commission. It was very well received yesterday by the State Planning Commission, and Ben Spinelli explained that the Executive Director from the Office of Smart Growth, that they have not yet started their analysis. They have, of course, worked with us in the past on the issues, and they'll set up a pre-petition meeting, which is where we sit with the Office of Smart Growth and other state agencies to talk about our submission and our belief in its consistency with the State Development and Redevelopment Plan. So that brings you up to date on the State Planning Commission. Any questions on that? I wanted to just to advise you all that we had, I advised you by email, that in compliance with the Permit Extension Act, we were required to file a notice with the New Jersey Register, and we have done that. That has been sent down. Tom, if you'd like to explain where it was sent and what the next steps
basically are. Basically, it was sent to the Office of Administrative Law. It will be published in the October 6th New Jersey Register, as essentially a notice regarding the implications of the Permit Extension Act for the Highlands region. And basically, under the law, the Act extends permits, but precludes the extension in areas that are environmentally sensitive. The Regional Master Plan is included by reference in the Permit Extension Act, and basically the language of the statute says that environmentally sensitive areas include the entire Highlands region, unless this council has, through the Regional Master Plan, designated growth areas. So the notice provides that there are no designated growth areas through the master plan, that growth areas may be designated through the master plan process, but at this point there are none. So the entire region is effectively excluded from the act.
So that notice was filed, and also a second notice was filed as required on the adoption of the Highlands Regional Master Plan, but it is still effective as of September 8th. Just want to let you know then, as back to the WQMPs, not the ones on our agenda for today, but ones that you have previously reviewed, the Heritage 55 WQMP amendment for Randolph Township, subsequent to our sending our comments down and our consistency recommendation, because it was under draft plan, to Department of Environmental Protection, Heritage 55 was approved August 13th. The adoption notice specifically cited the Highlands Council recommendations for conservation easement in the Highlands open water buffer and mitigation of the depleted water use. The applicant executed a conservation easement which met the Council's requirements, and NJDEP found that Randolph Township water conservation ordinances and water loss reduction process projects, which we had spoken to you about, have more than adequately achieved the 125% mitigation of a new depleted use. In terms of the Pinnacle Communities development in Oakland Borough,
about that initial report. So Randolph's water mitigation work was town-wide, was separate from this project. So if the county, I think, has against mitigation requirements that we recommended, is there going to be a process to keep running tallies so you don't sort of double count those gains? I mean, they're saying this program saved 100 gallons of water, Heritage 55 owed us 25, mm-hmm. then, there's got to be some point in which we're not overestimating how much was saved in terms of mitigation.
Right. When we did that, because we know that their mitigation projects totaled nearly 500,000 GPD, and that the project that we approved was 9,400 GPD. So yeah, we'll keep a running tally of that. I have to thank Dan for that. I didn't do that work. In terms of the Pinnacle Communities Development Oakland Borough, they were denied by NJDEP August 18th. And in the denial letter, the department found four reasons for the denial. It didn't actually expressly speak of the Highlands determination. It talked about the transfer of water from the Ramapo River to the Wayne Sewage Treatment Plant as an interbasin transfer of water around the pumping stations for New Jersey District Water Supply Commission, and that reduced their safe yield impermissibly. The site is a legitimate, it's a fine habitat for barred owl, based on findings from New Jersey and elsewhere, that the forest patch size was sufficient. Further, that the site is part of the Preakness Mountain Macrosite Natural Heritage Priority Site, and that was another reason for the denial. And finally, that the Borough of Oakland's recent submittal in its wastewater management plan to NJDEP and of its third round affordable housing plan to COA identified five other sites that were more appropriate for affordable housing. So that brings you to, that's my report out on ones that you have previously reviewed. The rest of my report, I think, can be pieced out as we reach different elements of the agenda.
Thanks very much. We welcome Glenn Matrano, who joined us since the role, and I think everyone knows the scene Glenn's letter. Glenn has declined the honor of being considered for a second term on the Highlands Council, but is willing to serve until he is replaced. So we're delighted you're staying.
As long as he has breath.
Right. And on the telephone is Tahisha and Scott, and I'm not sure if anyone, has anyone joined us since we began? Besides? No, it's okay. Budget and Finance Committee, so I'll be committee.
Well, we had a committee meeting. We have money. The gala has been canceled, however, for a while. I guess for the highlights, and I'm sure Greg and Ranchi can jump in and look at any of the specifics that you want to look at. We are dragging ourselves forward, kicking and screaming into the 20th century. Next year will be the 21st. Electronic processing, we're going to use QuickBooks. It will help us to create our own checks and keep things better in order. I do, in all seriousness, have to thank Ranchi in particular. He's done a yeoman's job as somebody who's a non-finance guy who jumped in, and the records are both accurate and consistent. And as I looked over the information, I was extremely pleased to see the detail. And it was easy to discern what went up, what went down, why it went up, why it went down, and the answers were all appropriate. Our new budget going into FY09 is $2.4 million. As you know, we've been cut back by the state, so we're backing into a number. We could politically say we're using zero-based budgeting, however, it's a little skinnier than that. But the good news is that we're carrying forward about $500,000 from last year's budget, and that we have $500,000 dedicated to the art committee. So the impact of the 2.4 versus the 3 million will not be devastating. I mean, we will survive. I do think, and although it's not within the removal of perusal of the budget committee and more in personnel, we are inadequately staffed. I mean, if there's anything that comes out clearly clear, as we move into planned conformance, it's going to be very difficult for existing staff to take that on. So we need to be mindful, and if we can push anybody that we know in state government to let us have additional resources. If we compare us to where we are in the Highlands, for example, we're a third of what they have, and we have an enormous staff. So if you have any specific questions, I'll really turn it over to Greg. He knows the budget more in detail. But I went through with my pen, and I couldn't find anything that didn't make sense.
Greg, do you want to add anything?
I was
going to
sit.
Sorry, if you sit, because we need your microphone. Sorry.
Right. Good morning. It's been a pleasure working with Ranji and working with Highlands Council and Tolkien in general. I believe that the budget that we've submitted and we've been working with Tom and Eileen, myself, and Ranji, the treasurer, has pretty much represents a good plan based upon the prior year spending and where we're going forward to into 2008-2009. As Bill has said, we've made changes, we've implemented a new accounting system, Everything should be up and running for October 1st. Halfway in as it stands right now. And on the audit standpoint, we're just awaiting the report. We've spoken to the auditors. They've received... They've received all the documentation. They're just waiting for final confirmations. And then they will arrange an exit conference.
Any questions?
I'd just like to make a comment. I think they really did do a good job. I guess Ranjit put all of these spreadsheets together. Couldn't find any questions I couldn't find an answer for, so good job.
I have to say that Bill, your chair of the Budget and Finance Committee, also helped, because he did ask for certain information put in there to make sure that it was very easy for people to understand. And then, of course, our team put it together.
We have a resolution in our packet to approve the general operating budget.
Quick question.
Yeah.
I noticed there's a big increase in conference and training. We expended $2,350 last year. We had budgeted $85,000 and we're going up to $25,000. I agree you must have a plan.
We have a plan. Truthfully, in the last year, in fact, since I've come here, we really haven't done any training, and we've done extremely minimal conferences. And that is because we just, I have to tell the staff, we couldn't. We had too much work to do. However, many of our staff actually have to do continuing education to maintain their planning licenses. We have attorneys. These people need to keep their education, keep moving forward. They are required in terms of a PP license to continue their education. Also, from the conference perspective now, we've been asked, for example, NJAPA, the New Jersey Association of Planning, New Jersey Planning Association has asked us to speak at their conference, and so staff will go there. So what we did is we looked at the number of staff involved, and then the other thing is that I'll give you another example. For our science unit, we had an opportunity of an educational program that takes place over a couple of days with actual field work on stream restoration. And we think it's critical that our staff know how to do this, especially if they're going to be doing the kinds of plans that we've set forth in our regional master plan. So, and the cost of that one training session, we would have liked to have sent two staff, but for that one training session, it was $1,500 to send one person. I did write to the organization and ask if we could have a cut price, and they declined to offer it. But we do try, and sometimes you succeed.
Who is the organization?
Do you know who was?
No, we'd have to go back.
Do you know Dan who was? Sorry.
I'm just curious.
Is this certifiable piece of training? Can they get some sort of acknowledgement that they've completed
yes.
the training and it's authorized that way?
Yeah, I don't know if it's like a diploma or anything, but they will get proof that they've done it and they'll go through it.
Is it possible for the training to be conducted under the auspices of, for one example, the Whippany River Watershed Management Watershed Action Committee, where stream restoration is a component of what that volunteer organization does, and get certification for that or get acknowledgement for that kind of training?
The staff can do that. We're constantly looking to see where programs are offered and then to look for the highest quality programs so that it enhances our opportunity to be able to respond to the elements of the plan. So we do look at all of these. This particular, I think between inside staff review, it took a long time before we would approve that particular course because we wanted to check out were there other opportunities and was this indeed the best one. And we felt that it was indeed the most professional and would give her, the staff member, the most ability to be able to assist us.
The ones that you looked at?
Yes.
What I'm suggesting is that there may be some alternatives. Morris Tomorrow, for example, is the mother of apparent watershed associations in Morris County, more or less. And there may be opportunities working with Morris Tomorrow, or with the Whippany, and some others. So why don't I ask some of those people to get in touch with you, Eileen, and have you vet them and see if those programs are available, because they could certainly use the volunteer assistance at the same time that they provide the training.
Right.
Maybe there's a curriculum for the training that they could adhere to.
Right, and that's what I did have, take advice as well from the professional staff on the quality of the program offered. So, I'd be glad to look at anything, because we do want to continue doing this type of work, and it is costly. And then we also pay for the continuing educational credits that are required for our other staff. And
that's the graduate studies program?
No, the graduate studies program is where we use interns and we pay them at a rate schedule that was devised by the state of New Jersey dependent on their qualifications. And we have three interns, and quite honestly, we work them as hard as we work regular staff.
You want to get a few more of those?
Yeah, we would do our best, and they work as hard as anybody else here.
I think it's totally appropriate that we get the best technical training for stream restoration, and I know my organization, for instance, we fork out a lot of money for our restoration staff to go to the best. It's very technical. It's a compact course. It's expensive, relatively, but it's compact. I mean, 12 hours of it is calculus. It's very technical. Mm-hmm. And so I think we should, pay to get the best, because it's a science that has evolved a lot over the years. It's become much more rooted in science than it was even when my organization began doing this 15 years ago.
I was just going to say, Rutgers does a lot of work on stream restoration as well. They were doing some work in Persephone on one of our streams.
Mm-hmm. Kurt, did you do something else?
Is rent increasing?
We don't negotiate rent. Rent is negotiated by the Department of Treasury. Department of Treasury did negotiate a higher rent and some retroactive payments that we were informed of.
Why not pay taxes?
So we have a resolution in the packet for the budget. Would someone like to
add? Move the resolution.
Okay. So I'll second it.
Okay. Other comments or questions or discussion of the budget from council members? Any public comment on this?
Sir.
Great. You will. Thanks very much.
When can I see the budget?
It's out on the table.
It's on the table?
That is the budget that we're adopting.
Should be in the budget.
The resolution.
The page operating budget.
Actually, I believe that it was attached to the resolution. Yeah.
It should be on the table.
No, I think it was stapled to the resolution. If you have a resolution, it's attached to the back.
Any other comments?
Yeah, I believe he has. I believe Mr. Shaw.
There are other public comments or questions? Other comments and council members? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Thank you very much, Bill. Thank you, Greg. Our only other scheduled committee meeting at this point is the Personnel Committee. We'll meet within a half hour or so after the conclusion of this meeting, late tonight. okay. We have... two or three planning grants to consider this morning. Two grants and one extension.
The first request for a grant before you today is a grant from Holland Township. This is their first request of a grant from the council, so there's no previous history. It is an initial assessment grant in an amount not to exceed $17,139. You set a threshold of $15,000, but you offered the opportunity for a town to come in with a higher amount if they offered the rationale as to why, and Holland has done so. Our staff internal committee has reviewed this and offered to you as a recommendation for approval. An initial assessment grant is to look at conformance for the entire municipality to conform to the regional master plan. Sussex County is applying for a grant, and just to give you a background on their past performance with grants, they had applied for a grant, a CP3, which is basically a county partnership grant with us, for parcel data it was approved by the council in January of 2006, executed in June of 2006, and paid February 2007, so that was successfully closed. They had applied for a prior approval grant. It was a grant that looked at final approvals that were pre the Act, so that they could get a handle of what was done prior to the Act. In the amount of $15,000, it had been approved by the Council January of 06, executed June 06, and paid out again in February of 07. They had a sewer and water grant, which was basically to map where sewer exists and where water exists, potable water, and that was in the amount of $25,000. It was approved by Council January 06, executed June 06, and paid out in February 07. They have two agricultural grants. One is an agritourism grant for $50,000, which was executed last year in September, and that has been granted an extension until the end of this month, and a commercial kitchen grant in the amount of $10,000, also executed last year in September, and also granted an extension until the end of October. They may come back for more extensions on those latter two, but they are proceeding with the work on them. The grant before you today, for your consideration, is a grant to assist them with GIS work in the county, and it's basically to do develop a business process to capture all lot line adjustments, subdivisions, consolidations, etc., and various other spatially enabled information, such as open space, municipal zoning, wastewater, etc., to support the maintenance of GIS-related data and supporting information for local governments' efforts to conform to the Highlands Regional Master Plan. And our hope is that this would become a business model that we could use for the other counties as well. The amount of their request is $15,000. They termed it an initial assessment grant. Staff, when we reviewed this, it is not an initial assessment grant. It is more of another CP3 grant, but we recommend approval of this. In particular, our GIS director, Roger Caron, reviewed this and felt that it would be very beneficial.
Motion.
Mr.
Grant?
I'll move.
Is there a second? Thank you. Somebody want a second?
Second.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. So this is designed for you. Is it Roger or your feeling that this is designed to be a model? Because I know that sort of traditionally there's been a tremendous amount of disparity between various systems, and this sounds like a lot of internal work on the county level. It wasn't as strong, I think, in the scope of work in terms of how it advances the RMP performance process.
Okay. Is Roger here? Roger, would you please come up?
Part of their business model is linking their GIS data to what they're calling this their land management system, which essentially links deed records and what goes through the clerk's offices, the municipal clerk's offices and the county clerk's offices. The deed records are important because they identify, in particular, one piece of information that is critical. Conservation easements are typically listed in deeds. So by linking those two pieces together, we, gain a tremendous amount of information, fairly quickly. I believe Morris County has a similar type of system that they're using currently, and they're continuing to develop, linking parcels and as subdivisions are created, linking those new parcels to deeds. So it helps in terms of our regional master plan updates, gathering additional information about parcels, whether it be ownership information or conditions on the property.
So part of the project is to design it in a way that if Morris County wanted to adopt the same, obviously there's value in it in Sussex County, mm-hmm. but the broader value is if we're going to get it in the rest of the counties.
That would be, that would be the great benefit if all the counties, the intricacies of the system don't need to be identical between all the counties, but the idea and the process, that business model, be very, very similar.
So is there anything in this process, the process of the grant, the implementation grant, that would have Sussex maybe under our initiation consult with the other counties to try to maximize the potential for its use by the other counties?
I mean, that is the intent of this business model, is that it, part of it is to be replicated with other counties who don't have the business model in place. Which are,
well, I think it would be probably useful for the counties to talk to each other before Sussex finishes the work and says, here you this.
Would there be any opportunity for compensation to those other counties? Or to Sussex?
No, already done it.
Don't ask Roger.
They get a free ride on Sussex County's grant.
Can I ask, do we still have the county planners meeting?
Absolutely.
It seems to me that this should come up as part of the discussion among those people.
Always, when they set the agenda, they always look at what's been on our agenda and discuss those elements, you know, what's gone through the account. So that will be done.
Other questions or comments?
Thanks, Roger. Any public comments on this meeting? All those in favor?
Aye.
Abstentions?
Abstain.
Okay. And we have one grant extension.
And this is just to advise you. You don't have to take any action on it, but Bethlehem Township were awarded an initial assessment grant on August 20th, and the requirement under the grant is that they start up the grant within 30 days. And they contacted to tell me that they had some extenuating circumstances, one being the cancellation of a meeting, township committee meeting, due to lack of a quorum, and then their the planner who would be working on this has had to leave the country to take care of some personal business. Thus, they just asked us to consider an extension. And so I'm just letting you know that we're extending Bethlehem's initial assessment grant for those extenuating circumstances.
I'd like to move item 12 ahead of item 11 on the agenda. It's something Eileen referred to, the approval of the contract for printing services. I think the trivial title of this is Nothing is Easy.
As we prepared the regional master plan and the time that has passed since July 17th, staff have been very assiduously going through the regional master plan to do editing, to check everything, to cross-reference, check consistency, in order to have this ready to go to print. And thus we had you approve a contract,
I think it was in June, I got to double check.
Back in June, I believe, that you approved a contract to award a contract to a printing company after we had done RFPs. However, since then, we got the document ready. We worked with our consultants, AKRF, our design graphic consultants, and we've had to take a second look at the contract because when we were looking at the quality of the maps that we have done and the photography, if we don't print it on a high quality paper, we run the risk of losing some of the quality of the work. And thus we were speaking to the printer that we had contracted with, and the pricing became a concern to us because it was significantly more than we had first bargained for. We were also looking to maintain 100% recycled paper. We also had a look at the numbers. You can purchase 1,000 copies or 2,500. And what we did is we looked back at what's happened previously in terms of how many requests we get, though that is not really indicative of how many we will need. We've talked to a lot of the towns as they've been coming in the last few weeks, and most of the professionals are saying that they're not going to be satisfied with the CD. They do want to have hard copies. So we think in terms of the lifespan of the regional master plan, and the value, the cost goes down considerably when you purchase 2,500 per unit. The cost per unit goes down considerably when you purchase 2,500 versus the 1,000 copies. So given that we've made these changes, what we're asking you to consider is that we have sent out an amended RFP to all who responded to the first, so under the legal advice of Tom. And we're asking you, because we do want to get this done as rapidly as possible. I did check with the Office of Smart Growth and the State Planning Commission the length of time it took them after their 2001 adoption of the plan. How long did it take till they'd gotten the hard copy out? And it was a considerable amount of time, a very considerable amount of time. So we will hope to have this out. If you approve this contract, contract today, it gives me the authority to move forward and make the decision based on the submittals from the firms contacted, and we would anticipate having the hard copies optimistically as early as the end of October.
Mr. Chairman, I know that past results are not indicative of future returns, but what was the number for the request for hard copies in the past?
We sent out, I do have it. We sent out 88 to the municipalities, 7 to the counties. Now, in terms of hard copies, now we would look to be to offering municipalities up to 3.
I need to ask you a question. The question was on the previous drafts.
How many did we? Over 300 hard copies, and then 300 on CDs. So it's,
so you want to jump from 1,000 now to 2,500. While the unit cost goes down, the total cost goes up. But, I mean, with the CD and the ability for anyone to print from the CD if they choose to, or to select portions from the CD and print those selected portions for their own enjoyment or I don't know that you need that.
That's why we were talking to municipalities, and they want, instead of the 88 we sent out, they want at least 3, because they want one for their governing body, one for their planning board, and then for their professionals.
That's 300.
So that's 300. Then we have to send them to legislators. We have to send them to the counties, obviously.
Why wouldn't the legislators have the ability to print them on the state printing mechanisms?
Actually, many of the departments would not be allowing them to print them.
Let's get some dollar amounts on the table. So the amount, the difference is between 1,000 and 2,500, and what we approved originally.
The cost per unit under our old contract will be over
restriction. We'd have to go dig it up.
I'm going to dig it up. But the cost per, when we were printing these, our cost was somewhere in the region of $70 per copy for the public. Under the contract here, the RFP before you today, the cost per unit would be approximately $24. So when you print them yourself, if you take these to a printing house, they're in the region of $70.
Are they going to be bound like that or in binders?
They will. Oh, not in binders anymore. If that's part of the cost. It's not just the printing. It's also the binding. It'll be perfect bound. This we just did. We printed this ourselves and then had it bound. So it won't look like it. It'll look better than this.
Where are you going to store 2,500 of these?
Good question.
We actually had one of the staff in the GIS unit do the math for us of the space it would take, and we can store it.
There's maybe less seating in this room.
That's right. They're good at your seating.
You plus the frames in your shop.
Right in the middle.
Your per copy cost above your printing, other than the collating stuff and the binding, is minimal. It's almost at a stock level. Stock and ink level.
I think John's question was absolutely right on the mark here. Let's find out what the difference is. Of course, you're right about that.
But you don't want to go back in and try and have it done again.
That's right.
Well, that's how do you deal with updates?
I have another question about
updates. Let's get the update question. Go ahead.
So, how do you deal with keeping that document current if you bind it in a perfect binding?
It'd be similar to the state plan. I mean, their amendments will be made and they'll be on the website, but we won't be reissuing this until the end of 6 years.
So there could be a separate folder without
yes.
References.
Absolutely. The technical documents are someone like that come out.
When we're talking about taxpayer dollars, everybody's got something to say about mm-hmm. this. It's not arcane. This is something we deal with all the time.
What's also true, that's true. It's also true we're going to sell other.
Our last resolution would have, per copy, was $27.57. The current resolution before you with this number of copies, and we've changed the specs somewhat to be more specific, is in the region of $24 a year.
And the expectation is that other than municipal, county, legislative officials, we would sell these copies at printing costs.
Absolutely, at cost, so that we could
recoup those dollars. Right.
Yes.
And you think there's a market for that?
We do.
I think the big distinction is the,
advertise.
The demand for the draft plan was minimal because it was a draft plan. We anticipate that each professional, all the professionals who are doing the planning in the region will want a hard copy, and we anticipate a much higher demand than the.
And so what was the total contract dollars for the first contract? And
it was this one? 27,000 when it was anticipated for 1,000 units. So it's cheaper in terms of unit price. $24 would be.
$24, but times 2.5.
Right. No. 60,000 is the new contract, so divided by 2,500, so it'd be 24 per year.
Per copy.
So
it's only $3 cheaper.
And just, you know, we
the initial was only for 1,000, so it was $27 a unit. This is for 2,000.
So $27 times 1,000 times it.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Now it's $24 times
2,500.
2.5.
Right? Up to 60,000. Yes.
So what is what?
Not to exceed 60,000.
$4,500.
So one of your memos had indicated that the reduced price by having a greater volume was going to be $18 and something. How did it get from 18 to 24?
That's where we started running into the issues that I explained earlier of quality of the paper that we use and issues like that.
Because there would be a bigger difference.
Yes. Yes.
The case is that the cost of the paper added from $18 to $24 to that number, so you're not really comparing apples to apples.
Correct.
$27 number was not with the upgraded paper. So that's where you can reduce the paper and reduce the cost.
I defer to the farmer. Apples and oranges, you know.
I'm just wondering if I need to pay for my coffee.
We don't have a written resolution impact on this.
Yes, you do.
We could do it. I couldn't find it either.
So what would the $2,500 be with a reduced quality of paper? I'm just curious.
Help work the papers.
The issue with the quality paper, as I understand it, is that a lot of the graphics would be difficult to impossible to read.
Well, they'd be certainly diminished. And I mean, I learned more about this than I care to learn. You know, we don't know anything about this. And we were looking at samples, and there, you know, people are, this is grayer, and this is browner, and this is, you know, this has got flex in it. And so, you know, we had to deal a lot with AKRF to advise us as to, and we certainly don't want to. The work that has gone into this, particularly in the maps, we don't want it diminished by an inferior paper.
That's the maps.
And the
photos. Let me just say, so as you know, we have a resolution in our packet on the subject, which is to authorize the executive director to enter into a contract and not to exceed $60,000. So someone like to move that resolution.
Also move.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ask, is there a budget impact between the $40,000 difference? I mean, you know, after all the blood, sweat, and tears that live in this thing, let's get it out there. The last thing I want to hear is the public coming in and saying, I can't tell what's going on with the maps because the colors are smudge. Okay? So this is not a huge amount of money.
No, but we did put money into the RMP budget for this. It's not coming out of our general operating budget, but right. We do have the funds.
Right. So it's not that question's not on the table, that this is a significant financial question.
But you could refer to those people. Refer to those people who are having some trouble because their clarity is not so great. Go back to their computer and take a look at them on.
They could, but I have to get into a great philosophical discussion, but I think government should not set hurdles about information which we're going to require to comply with them.
Well, the government automatically does that when it reduces your budget from 1 year to the next.
Other comments from council members on this resolution? The public comments on this? have the resolution in front of us. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? We can always sell copies on eBay. So stay here.
Signed copies.
Okay. We turn now to item 11, which is five water quality management plan amendments.
With the adoption of the regional master plan, the council is now providing consistency determinations to NJDEP pursuant to NJAC 7:38.1, rather than recommendations as we had been doing under draft plan. Consistency determinations are factual comparisons of the proposed WQMP amendments to all relevant aspects of the regional master plan policies, objectives and programs. The review template has been completely revised for this process. You have before you on your agenda today five of these WQMPs, but I would like to advise you that the first four are being done as these consistency determinations in terms of our final adopted plan, whereas the Trump, which will be the final one we look at, is a revision and it's done under the approach we took for recommendations under the draft plan. We can talk about that when we get to it. The consistency determinations for the four area-wide WQMPs were released for comment August 27, 2008. So that's A through D. Comments were due by close of business September 8, 2008. We received comments on all four of those WQMP amendments. Highlands Council staff then summarised the public comments and modified the consistency determinations as appropriate. We then posted those consistency determinations with the track changes so that the public could also follow where changes had been made in response to those public comments. And what you have before you today, that those track changes are again reflected in those documents so that you can see changes made on the basis of public comment received. We have a team of staff that worked on each of these reviews with a different staff member in each case taking lead but working with the team. The first one before you is Mount Arlington. The Mount Arlington at Route 202 Howard Boulevard is a proposed amendment that it consists of allowing two existing residential properties, 200 Howard Boulevard, which is Block 65, Lot 1, and 202 Howard Boulevard, which is Block 64, Lot 7. They are currently within the upper Raritan WQMP area, and the plan is to have sewage conveyed through the borough of Mount Arlington WMP area and treated by MusConnectCon Sewage Authority. Sewage treatment plant, which is located in the upper Delaware WQMP area. The two single-family residential properties currently discharge into septic systems, and both of those have been certified by the borough as failing. Therefore, an estimated 600 GPD of additional sewage flow would be conveyed to the MusConnectCon Sewage Authority sewage treatment plant. Deed restrictions would be placed on the lots to prevent future flow increases. Project was found to be consistent with all but one of the applicable goals, policies and objectives of the regional master plan, and that exception was objective 2B8B, which requires the 125% mitigation of the increase in consumptive depletive water use. Just want one more thing on that to draw your attention to is that the borough notes that there are already multiple water conservation measures being implemented within the MCMUA water service area that would effectively mitigate the loss of the 600 GPD from the source watershed. NJDEP may determine that Mount Arlington has already met that requirement, as they did earlier in our previous discussion. Council staff could not determine whether the total water use has actually declined based on the information provided. It would be necessary for the borough to conduct a comparison of pre- and post-depletive uses to determine if the actual a draw against the MCMUA has declined.
What I'd like to suggest to the Council is that we, with each of these, we, after this presentation, we have public comment on them, and then we have Council discussion. Is there anyone from the public would like to comment on this case? Sir?
Yes, the 600 feet is even, I presume, is for both residential properties. Is that correct? 300 feet?
That's correct.
What?
This is not really a question and answer session. This is a comment. So if you have comments, I mean,
well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you're not obligated to comment.
I know, but I do want to know what you're talking about, because this is part of the way you're going to go forward. So let me get back to it. So that's 300 gallons per household per day, with an easement on the property that will allow no future increase. And I have another question, which I will ask. What is the additional cost to these two property owners for going through this process?
Other comments, questions on this?
The people, sorry, representatives from the town, they just...
Can we come up to the...
Yeah, please, sir.
Morning, council members. My name's Darren Phil, borough engineer of Mount Arlington from Suburban Consulting Engineers. I have Dave Clark here, another principal engineer from Suburban, who provided the backup data to the council pertaining to the original review. The borough has been requested back about 5 years ago to evaluate this area of existing development. It started with seven properties. It's been reduced down to these two properties to amend our wastewater management plan to include them into an existing sewer that crosses the frontage of the properties. Through that process with the DEP is where the deed restrictions came in. There are connection fees that are associated with the properties for which, should we obtain approval to allow them to connect to the sewer, that they would have to turn around and obviously pay those fees. So I believe to answer the public's question, the only fee that it is being established is the sewer connection fee, as well as then a user fee that is obviously established by ordinance.
Questions for them or comments?
I have a question. I guess the other costs would also be associated with these are two private property owners?
Yes, so two.
Do they have, just out of curiosity, they have fees associated, escrow fees associated with obtaining this?
Actually not. It's no different than when the borough went through about a decade ago and sewered the entire town. This is a part of the town, obviously existing residents. It's all worked through the establishment of connection fees for the, obviously, infrastructure, the planning, and what have you. So there was no additional assessment done to these properties, no different than several months ago we were here with regards to Parker Circle Southern, an existing development of about 40 properties. There was no surcharge for the additional planning because of the continual evolving regulatory jurisdictions that result in additional expenditures.
And I have another question. Is this a health and safety issue? What's driving this?
The failure of the septic. That's why it went from seven down to the two, because the other ones wanted to be connected, but actually there was no proof that that could be obtained that they're actually under a failed state.
Thank you. Just a question. How are they going to monitor the 300 gallons per day? It's like, what do you say, water consumption?
No, it's actually when you're dealing with the flows generated from a single-family home, it's per dwelling unit.
EDU. So they have one EDU, one single-family home, and that's it. They can't subdivide and then connect that other one on. They can't change the house to a duplex where then it would be two EDUs. Obviously, if they want to expand their kitchen or something like that, that's, they can do that because it's just, it's the same flow. It's not like a commercial building based on square footage. It's a single-family home.
The 300 is an average for an EDU generally.
Exactly.
What if they exceed that? What if they are doing 400?
The DEP is really, the deed restriction is that it's for a single-family connection. It correlates to the average of 300 gallons per day. There's no metering put on there. The DEP just has it deed restricted to the single-family house.
It's just an average of 300.
Do you have an established process or testing procedure that you use to ascertain whether or not there's a failed septic system, and do you apply that in each instance?
With regards to these properties, there was confirmation from the property owners, and then the health departments went out and did a physical inspection of those systems and prepared a report.
Is that the borough or the county health department?
It's the boroughs, but they go through shared services, so it wasn't an actual department from the borough. I believe that at that time it was Madison was covering the borough Mount Arlington.
And do they have an established process with a written checklist or something? I mean, is there a procedure for deciding whether or not? I know there's only guidance from the state, and there's a lot of back and forth about what's the best way to make that decision. Do you have a process that you've worked on?
I think the borough pretty much leaves it in the hands of the health department to turn around and make that judgment call. They did inspect the other ones, and these two properties were confirmed to be failed where the other ones weren't. So they obviously have some strict regimented criteria that they follow.
So does the health department have a written process that you know of?
I'm not sure. Once again, it's shared services, so it's not even from our town.
And can you discuss a little bit the water conservation measures that will be required of these two homes once they hook in?
The water conservation measures for which the borough has implemented, it's actually ongoing. We recognize the fact that the borough is in a unique situation where a very large portion of the borough is within the Musconetcong drainage basin, and our sewers come from the through and be treated down at the Musconetcong Sewage Authority, but our water actually comes from the Morris County MUA. So a large portion of our town is actually an interbasin transfer. So recognizing that, the borough implemented several years ago a strict annual water assessment for leakage within the system. And that has been very successful, and there was documentation that it is generated by the Department of Public Works on an annual basis of all leaks found, quantified, and then obviously, you know, the methodology for repair and the success of that repair. Then we just, I believe 2 years ago, we turned around and acknowledged the fact that we have several large townhouse projects that that were constructed in the borough for which we required them, because they had irrigation systems throughout their common areas, to restrict that to odd even days. And then we also went through and did an evaluation and significantly increased the cost of irrigation water, since these are separately metered, and the meters are removed. Removed annually because they can't stay out in the through the winter, so they're actually shut down this year and then they're reactivated. But the cost of irrigation water in the borough is significantly higher, possibly I think it's almost double of potable water. So the fact of the matter is through that process, there's been a lot of dialogue with these developments where they're going in and looking to find alternate water, groundwater, what have you, to not using the obviously the MUA, which would assist in eliminating that immigration transfer. So it's definitely successful. It's working, and typically we find if you hit somebody in the pocketbook, you get a reaction.
And so you have, how do you measure this? You have
a... We never totaled it up, but we know that in the data on the assessment of the size of the leak, there's ranges of gallonage, and we could go through and do the math, but it's thousands of gallons per day that we're catching annually just on the leaks that develop. So it's way above what this requested transfer is.
And for these homes, for instance, do you have requirements for low-flow devices or, you know, consumer reduction besides the lawn watering?
I'm not quite sure. Did you know that?
There was no implementation or request through the DEP to require those implementations. Being as they are existing homes, they didn't necessarily want to impact them much further than the deed restrictions that they're already asking them to abide by.
Thank you.
Other comments, questions?
Looking through this document, I see all these C's and I's and A's and all this work has been done, and I look at some spots that we have no information on, and I'm curious as to what it all means. I mean, are they per policy, each consistency that we listed? If so, why or some not?
Not marked at all. You don't see IC or NA, because if you look at the top, maybe, for example, they're not in the lake management area. So it's not as if you have to go through it and show which do apply and which don't. None of that.
I looked at the cultural, archaeological, and scenic resources. I mean, it would appear that would be non-applicable in this case. Mm-hmm. There's no NA listed anywhere.
What page is that, please?
15,
okay.
It shows absence for each one of the things at the top, and so there was nothing to compare to. There was nothing to evaluate.
That's what I'm saying.
So it's just this is the template that we use completely.
That's right.
It's not specifically designed for this property.
That's correct. It is the template that we use for every amendment, regardless of the facts of that.
There are 22 areas that we look at. After you look at the zones, there are 22 areas that are examined. If you see nothing in them, that area, nothing applied at all.
Okay.
And that's only in the others, that's what
so
you
see.
So
there wouldn't be things added into other applicants?
No, this is the full template, because we did discuss cutting out areas that were not, but it's much easier for the staff to take one, and it's consistently done throughout every, and this is exactly what would have been sent to DEP, in terms of the county WQMPs, without the without any obviously check marks in anything. So it's as we do these from any of the consistency reviews will be done in this manner.
And then this document goes to DEP.
Correct.
If I bring a background for all these, could you remind us of the timing of this? DEP cannot make a decision until they receive our consistency determination.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes, we have waited till they're published, then we take them up, and then DEP has to wait for us to give the consistency determination.
And are they or we under any time, is there a deadline in terms of, this isn't a 90-day
thing,
right?
It's
not such a
90-day. You're talking with people like Darren said this is a 4-year project for you?
It's, I think, 5.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Apologies. 5 years.
This is because of the interbasin transfer. It's not just the fact that, you know, they're within the Highlands.
Mm-hmm.
Mount Arlington is very unique, and interbasin transfers are not, you know, something that, you know, you want to support. So there's a lot of documentation for the state and homework to do to, you know, prove the necessity to do that.
We did ask the staff, though, to move these, you know, as rapidly as we could.
Well, thank you both. I don't know if there was, didn't think there was any other public comment. I'm sure. Other comments from council members?
Ready. I have a question about objective 2B8B8, where there's an inconsistency.
Okay.
So new uses shall only occur under a conservation management plan approved, which we haven't approved anything yet.
That's correct.
Or mitigation through a permit, I'm skipping, trying to get to the heart of the words, obviously, a mitigation, a permanent reduction of existing. How is this determined to be inconsistent? Is it because there's no approved?
That's correct. And it's, if you go to the very back where I read, the Borough did supply us with the information on their mitigation work, but we don't have the information to do what you're suggesting, so we left it as inconsistent. But I did report out earlier, Debbie, I think before you came, that we had a similar provision in a similar WQMP we had done, and the DEP did approve it based on the fact that they felt it had met that particular provision. And with this, it must be we must be reminded that our consistency reviews are advisory to NJDEP.
We have a resolution in our package tonight that introduced to authorize the executive director to provide the consistency information DEP on behalf of council. Would someone like to move that resolution?
I'll move that consideration.
Mr. Chairman, I have one question.
Well, let me just say the resolution second.
I'll second.
Okay.
Yes, this is a question for council. Some time ago, a discussion came up in Sussex. A small portion is within the MSA, the Muskegon Sewage Authority. Obviously, I know it's the Morris Township Borough, but do I still have a vote in this?
Just explain one more time in terms of what your relationship is to the sewage
authority. Because one or two municipalities in Sussex were part of the MSA sewage authority. I know I was flagged that talk a while back when something came up in that line that I was unable to vote.
If you would, why don't you abstain for today and I can analyze the issue further for future reference as well.
Yes.
I guess this is a procedural question. What we would be voting on is to send this report as written. We're not making a determination of consistency. Like, we're not declaring consistent or inconsistent. We're approving a report that shows where it's consistent and where it's inconsistent. And there's a difference because there's a judgment involved.
No, the finding is that it is inconsistent. We do not make any recommendation. We're just giving the report on where an application is consistent, inconsistent, or not applicable. We don't make any judgment call. We just...
So thereby, that we've never discussed this. Anywhere on one of these reports, there's an I.
Correct.
That's it. It's correct. Inconsistent. Is that, I mean, I don't think we've ever discussed that, but that's what we're doing.
You're correct.
Doing.
Yes.
Well, it's free. I mean, the way it's phrased here in the conclusion is to say we're finding that it is consistent, except for that inconsistency.
We have discussed the degree of consistency or inconsistency.
That's what I'm pointing out. We've not really set any standard of consistency, which maybe we don't want to. We maybe just want to send, but just so we all understand what we're doing. We're approving a report that says it's inconsistent here.
And then it's up to the DEP to determine whether that one degree of inconsistency or one degree of inconsistency is whatever it means.
Right. Other comments, questions, council members? All those in favor of the resolution?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention?
Opposed.
Tracy's opposed and Glenn abstained. Okay. The resolution carries. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm interested to know why the motion was opposed by 2 members.
Opposed by 1 member, I believe.
I would have voted affirmative. The issue came up a while back when we had a wastewater amendment because Sussex, Stanhope Borough, and Byram is in Sussex. I remember it was flagged.
My question is directed at what we were talking about here was that it seemed to me a black and white issue. On its face, there is an inconsistency. And that's what the DEP will hear. And I'm just curious to know the reason for your vote no.
Why don't we discuss it after we get through these articles?
It's based on not being able to be a little bit pregnant. You're consistent or you're inconsistent?
Well, that's inconsistent.
That's my opinion. That's why I voted that way. Okay. I don't want to spend more time on it. Okay. We can do it later.
Okay.
But.
Okay. Okay. So we turn next to second.
Okay. The second WQMP before you today is Pilot Travel Center in Union Township. This is a proposed amendment to the upper
Raritan. Just a second. Can I ask the public to please, whispering really carries in this room. I say this every meeting, so we record every word you say. So please don't whisper if you have to talk to each other. Go out and home.
Can you assign these resolutions numbers?
Well, the next.
Well, what was the one you just decided?
We just decided Mount Arlington Township.
Right.
And I leave it. It's item 11A on the agenda. We are now going to item 11B on the
11A?
Agenda. 11A? We just did 11A. We are now about to discuss 11B.
This is a proposed amendment to the Upper Raritan Water Quality Management Plan and the Union Township Wastewater Management Plan that would allow for the expansion of the existing on-site discharge to groundwater wastewater treatment facility for the redevelopment of the site formerly known as Johnny's Truck Stop. The proposed sewer service area for the new facility is restricted to the existing impervious surface cover footprint of the previous Johnny's Truck Stop. The proposed project has no increase in impervious surface. The total area to be redeveloped is 7.5 acres of the 11.75 acre lot. Projected wastewater flow is 6,500 GPD. The project will use an on-site well for water supply and will discharge treated wastewater back to groundwater. In the case of this project, we found that it was inconsistent with policies 1B7 forests, 1F2 critical habitat, and 6H1 the redevelopment and sensitive lands, and objectives 1K4C carbonate rock. The requirement for 125% mitigation of the increase in depleted water use of 4,500 gallons per day. In addition, the environmentally sensitive areas that will not be disturbed should be de-restricted to ensure that they remain in perpetuity. That's the conclusion. I would ask that Chris Ross respond to one issue on this because there was new information on that you had alerted me to. Just explain that, Chris.
Sure. When we first reviewed the application, we did not have a site plan. Right after we posted it, the next day we received the site plan. Then when we reviewed the site plan, we noticed that there are two septic fields in the undeveloped portion of the site, which contains the critical resources I linked with reference. So that's the issue that we have to set time.
I thought that was important because otherwise when we're talking about just the existing impervious surface, you'd wonder why it was violating those objectives, and that's what Chris just explained to you.
Second. Is there public comment on this proposal?
Elliot Rubin, New Jersey Highlands Coalition, and this particular proposal is going to be drawing water from a deficit sub-watershed, and in your consistency determination review, you're requiring 125% mitigation. I would just like to refer for the record to Governor Corzine's Executive Order Number 114, Item Number 10, in which it is stated, in which it is ordered, the DEP shall take appropriate action to ensure that no approval is given to any portion of a water quality management plan amendment in the protection zone, the conservation zone, or the environmentally constrained subzones as delineated in the Highlands Plan within a HUC 14 sub-watershed that is in or anticipated to be in deficit of net water availability as identified by the Highlands Plan, unless the approval is conditioned on a municipal water use and conservation management plan consistent with the policies in the Highlands Plan having been approved by the Highlands Council and having been fully implemented. Thank you.
Thank you. Other public comments? Council member comments?
deed restriction requirement, isn't that a recommendation rather than the black and white issue? Or is that a requirement?
There's actually language in the plan, as I recall, that requires deed restriction for environmentally sensitive areas, so that would be part of the consistency of determination.
I just had the same comment that Mr. Schreier did. So if you're going to, in your transmittal letter to the DEP, you can rephrase that so that it's established as a consistency determination or consistency determination or compliance requirement in essence, right?
Yes.
So in order to be consistent, there must be a deed restriction in order to ensure these environmental sensitive areas.
Yes,
so
that would be part policy. Of the, yes.
Okay. And then just in terms of format, in a letter that goes to the department, will if the conclusions, and I think the reports are great, and I think they're very informative and clear about mm-hmm. consistency. If you can draw out the conclusions paragraph, put that in the cover letter that goes to the DEP, so that it's up front. Not hard to find if the council's emails.
Absolutely.
But I would assume the letter would essentially, or maybe verbatim, say what's in the conclusions of the report.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I was just reading the comments, and in the DEP review letter, it noted that the site is virtually 100% built out. But then we've got an inconsistency with forest and critical habitat. So how does that?
Because
pollinators living under the pavement? Or?
No, and that's why I asked Chris to come up, because initially, that when we looked at this without the site plan, our staff were reviewing it in that sense too, until they discovered that the fields were in that the septic fields were in that undisturbed area, and that's where there was that concern was raised.
So what you're saying is the public noticed that the DEP was inaccurate?
I didn't say that, but
we just didn't have the site plan. We didn't have all the information we needed to identify that.
And I guess it's correct that the site is virtually built out. This is a redevelopment. But in our consistency review, we have to take into consideration those septic fields and their location in terms of consistency with the
their existing fields?
No, these would be new fields.
New fields.
Actually, that was my question. But I think I just figured it out. I was looking at the new facility is restricted to the existing impervious cover. And how could that reconcile? But that's what it is.
That's
the construction. The development's restricted to it, but the septic field is going to disturb undisturbed areas.
That is correct.
Ready to vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions?
A little late, but under the public comments letter, 6th bullet. By increasing the wastewater disposal capacity, as proposed, an increase in site activity is imminent. Should that be imminent or imminent?
It's
just
a typo. It's just a typo.
The editor at work.
All right. Turn now to item 11C of the agenda.
Okay. Item C is the Hamptons at Pohatcon, and the applicant is EAI Investments, and they are here today. It's a proposed amendment to the Upper Delaware Water Quality Management Plan submitted on behalf of EAI Investments LLC for an expansion of the Phillipsburg sewage treatment plant sewer service areas to include the proposed Hamptons at Pohatcom development in Pohatcom Township in Warren County. The proposed development is a Mount Laurel inclusive development under Superior Court jurisdiction in the matter of EAI Investments LLC versus Township of Pohatcom. Consists of 396 residential units and associated recreational park, 6 one-bedroom units, 26 two-bedroom units, and 364 of those are three-bedroom units. Of which 352 are planned as single-family residential units. The
The project, in terms of consistency with the regional master plan, has been deemed inconsistent. And just to go over the conclusions, extension of both water, public water supply and wastewater systems into the conservation zone not associated with cluster development, a waiver for public health and safety, and into the ag resource area without mandatory clustering. These are the primary issues that we have in the conclusions here. Water availability constraints in two HUT 14 sub-watersheds, one of which potentially could be addressed by an RMP update. Incursion of structures and stormwater infrastructure into Highlands open water buffers, and a proposal to discharge stormwater off-site to a preserved park. Stormwater recharge requirements have been waived by NJDEP without a requirement for achieving on-site recharge to the extent practicable, given karst topography, or for off-site mitigation of any recharge that cannot be met on-site. Conflicting information potentially due to a distinction between landscape project versions 2 and 3 regarding potential upland sandpiper habitat, and insufficient information to determine consistency regarding the application of low-impact development BMPs, karst topography concerns for the long-term integrity of construction and infrastructure, especially sanitary sewers and storm sewers, compliance with the TMDL for pathogens on Lopatcong Creek, wellhead protection, and maximum feasible water conservation measures.
Someone like to move this resolution we have?
Can I
still move? Second. Excuse me, Chairman, second. Public comments on this application? Any comments? Yes, ma'am, in the back?
Hi, I'm Judith Forbes. I'm resident of Pohaka. I just want to remind the council that the threatened and endangered birds, specifically the Savannah Sparrow and Kestrel, were found on the site and near the site by Blaine Rothhauser on behalf of the township in 2006 during the land use board process.
Thank you. Other comments?
Thank you. My name is Neil Yoskin. I'm an attorney with the law firm Sokol, Behat & Fiorenzo. I represent EAI Investments. I want to begin by echoing the comments made at yesterday's State Planning Commission meeting by my co-counsel, Ron Morgan, that the regional master plan appears to target several approved COA Round 2 sites, including this site, for elimination. We responded in detail to the staff determination of consistency. I want to thank you, by the way, for the promptness with which that was done. You should take over the wastewater management planning process at DEP. But and our comments on the RMP actually date back before that. We, in February of 2008, when this site was first listed in the draft RMP as a conservation zone, we brought to the council's attention at that time that this project has been in Pohatcong Township's affordable housing element since 1988. It has been court approved since 1996. So it was as early as 1996 that the Superior Court directed that a wastewater management plan be processed for this site by Pohatcong Township. That application was not filed until 2002, and it was only in July of this year that DEP finally issued the notice of proposed amendment. I brought this photograph because it illustrates the fact that this site is unusual in that it is, at least you have mapped it as a conservation zone, apparently because it's farmland. It's mapped as a PA4 in the state plan. It's only one of two sites we can find in the state plan in which there are metropolitan planning area 1 areas immediately adjacent to a planning area 4. As you can see from this photograph, there's high-density housing on three sides of this project. Those areas are all designated as PA1 under the state plan, and of course as existing community zones under your own designations. Those comments notwithstanding, we made those comments back in February, this property has been classified as a conservation zone, and the ripple effect of that as you go through the requirements of the RMP is that you make multiple findings that it's inconsistent with the RMP. We replied specifically to each and every of the items that Eileen mentioned, and I don't think that they're worth going through in detail, but I will note that a lot of the debate that went on at DP over the past couple of years has to do with this ditch you see that runs through the middle of the property. During the course of the wastewater management planning process, that ditch went from just that, an erosional ditch, to a state open water, to a Category 1 water, to a Highlands open water, as a result of which that now has a 600-foot wide swath around it, 300 feet on either side, which meets the buffer requirements, both of DEP stormwater rules, of the flood hazard area rules, and of the RMP requirements for Highland open water buffers. That's why, for example, you had a finding that there was an inconsistency because no determination had been made as to the TMDL compliance for pathogens in Pahatcon Creek. The reason for that is once DEP determines that a special water resource protection area meets their criteria, special water resource protection areas are designed to ensure that there's no measurable change in the water, in the water quality of the receiving water. Therefore, there's no reason to do a numerical analysis of TMDL compliance because by definition, there's no change in water quality. That's just illustrative of the elements, the 10 or 14 elements. Of course, the timing of this decision creates a mutual problem for all of us when the wastewater management planning process started in 2002, the Highlands Act had not even been proposed. Now we have a situation where you're making a recommendation to DEP on a wastewater management plan. I would only note in that regard that Section 7 through 10 of Governor Corzine's Executive Order 114 give you the discretion to approve find consistent projects in conservation zones in selected circumstances and with certain conditions. If you read through those, we think that you will find that this would meet those conditions, and what we would therefore urge the Council to do is not act on this today, but to reconsider it under Executive Order 114 and come to the conclusion that we think is appropriate, which is that you should issue a determination of consistency. Now, as Eileen noted, your determination will not be binding on DEP, but if DEP takes your determination of inconsistency and says that on that basis they are not prepared to approve this wastewater management plan amendment, then what you have done is interfered with the construction of an affordable housing project, which again was approved under round two as early as 1996 and represents Pahatcon Township's sole affordable housing site and satisfies their entire round two obligation. There'll be 44 affordable housing units, and there are 44 Mount Laurel beneficiary families out there somewhere who will not be able to benefit from those homes if your decision today results in a decision not to issue a wastewater management plan. So we would urge you to reconsider the resolution, reconsider your decision, and look at what EO 114 allows you to do. Thank you.
And what prevented this from being built between 1996 and now?
Let's put it this way. The court was required multiple times to direct Pahatcon Township to do that which it was required to do, which was to amend its WIMP plan. Once the wastewater management planning process started, the first thing that interfered was Administrative Order 2007-1 from Commissioner Jackson. When the project was first designed, it had no buffers because there were, the wastewater management rules had not been adopted. That was February 2004. The wastewater management rules were adopted in 2004 because this water course on the property discharges to the Patcon Creek, which is a C1 water. It was deemed to have 300-foot buffers. Under DEP stormwater rules, you're allowed to develop in the outer 150 feet of a special water resource protection area if it's actively farmed. The project was changed to preserve the inner 150 feet. The unit count was reduced and the project was moved back. The commissioner's administrative order reversed the presumption that you can develop in the outer 150 feet of an actively farmed SWRPA. And I should point out that this Highlands Open Water Buffer, the SWRPA, whatever you want to call it, is currently farmed all the way to the limits of the water course. So there are no riparian corridor benefits there today whatsoever. It's all farmed. Rather than litigate the validity of the administrative order, my client changed the project once again and widened the buffers from 150 to 300 feet on either side of the water course. Once that hurdle was gotten past, the land plan for the project always included a road crossing through the water course because the project is U-shaped. There's an 11-acre park that's going to be built to the benefit of Patcon Township on one side, and it was felt that good planning dictated that there be traffic circulation within the subdivision. DEP twice in the course of the Executive Order 109 process, which is the wastewater management planning process, indicated that the water course was acceptable. In March of this year, in the stream encroachment permitting process, DEP said prior determinations regarding the road crossing notwithstanding, the road crossing didn't meet the criteria for hardship waivers under the stream encroachment regulations. The project was then changed yet again to eliminate that road crossing. Today, there will only be a pedestrian footpath. That resulted, again, in a delay of a couple of months. And then DEP finally, in July 7th, issued its notice of proposed amendments. So you had the adoption of the Highlands Act, you had the stormwater rules, then you had the administrative order 2007, and then you had the determination regarding stream encroachment. So there were at least four legislative or regulatory changes which caused delays in this project. And that's just the regulatory, wasn't the litigation.
Thank you. I have several questions. The ditch you referred to, what open water is that? That must be a stream.
It's actually not. It's shown as a ditch on the Warren County soils map. It's not. It does not appear as a stream on the USGS quad sheet. The DEP's stormwater rules define a stream for the purposes of the Special Water Resource Protection Area provisions as any water feature that appears either on a USGS quad or on a county soils map. So it's a ditch on the county soils map.
Okay, and that is, and C1 protections afforded to ditches?
If it appears on the soils map.
Okay. Second question is, you said something happened in July of this year with regard to approval of a wastewater management plan?
That's when DEP published the notice of proposed plan amendment in the New Jersey Register. July 7th. That's what triggered the sending of this to you for a consistency determination.
Because it's not been granted yet.
That's correct. It's a notice of proposed amendment.
And that's for the area, this is for the townwide?
This is specific
to this amendment.
This does two things. It's a site-specific amendment, which would include this property in a sewer service area. It doesn't need to amend Phillipsburg's regional one for the reason that in 1996 the court ordered that a specific amount of gallonage be reserved on an exclusive and prioritized basis in the Phillipsburg plan. Actually, Powhatcon has an allocation of 540,000 gallons a day, and reserved within that gallonage is the gallonage for this project.
Okay, because I wanted to make sure I didn't misunderstand that the court has ordered submission of new wastewater management plans to DEP for all of the sending towns. And you weren't saying that those are now being noticed because they've been
disapproved. No.
They've been disapproved.
No.
This is not part of that. That's
correct. Process. This is a separate process.
Okay. And my last question is, and I don't mean this to sound impertinent, so if it sounds that way, I don't mean it. I don't understand why you're here because we had a discussion, maybe you were in the hall, about what we're doing is determining whether or not what was presented is consistent with the existing regional master plan. So when you said we want you to reconsider how, I mean, we're not going to change the plan. I mean, it's either consistent with the plan or it isn't. So I want to make sure I understand what your thought process is in asking us to reconsider.
Well, it's twofold. One, we want you to understand, and we want it a matter of public record, our longstanding belief that this never should have been mapped as a conservation zone. But that's done. That's in the RMP. What I was pointing out to you that I think gives you latitude was that Governor Corzine's executive order indicates that you can, in fact, find that projects that are in conservation zones are consistent with the plan and that you can recommend wastewater management plan amendments given certain conditions. And since the executive order was only issued less than 2 weeks ago, and overlap with your findings, your staff findings relative to this project, we thought it would be advisable. We would like you to rethink it. You certainly don't have to listen to it.
Understood.
Thank you. Other comments?
Right,
Mr. Chairman, given what we've heard here, I'd like to get a legal opinion from our own counsel on this regarding that potential finding of this.
Well, I guess what I would ask is I'm not quite sure exactly which provision of the executive order you're referring to.
Give me a second.
While he looks at that, are there other comments?
We have it here.
Yes, a copy.
This is offered for the council's consideration, even if Mr. Noskin's interpretation is right, that it's probably a fair amount of work for us to do to put our own procedures together to consider when we might grant those exceptions. So I don't know if the timeline should hold us up on any action.
Just to respond to Tom's question. Section 7 is directed at DEP and not you. It says, in approving any plan or permit application or in issuing any other approval, which would be a WIMP amendment, for a project located in the conservation zone as delineated in the Highlands Plan, DEP shall, to the maximum extent feasible, require that development proposals designed to meet the clustering provisions of the Highlands Plan as necessary. And then there are certain findings. One of the comments made by staff was that this is inconsistent with the cluster provisions of the RMP. We agree. This project is, in fact, clustered. It's just not clustered to the standards of the RMP, and the simple reason is there was no RMP for us to design to when the project was designed. And then, Tom, it says in paragraph 9, DEP shall take appropriate action to ensure that no water allocation permit is issued for any development project located in the conservation zone. This project is within a franchise area of Aqua, New Jersey, which already has a water allocation permit. So we think that that's met. And then again, in paragraph 10, DEP take appropriate action to ensure that this addresses WIMP amendments in particular, that no approval is given to any portion of a water quality management plan amendment in the conservation zone in a deficit of net water availability area, unless the approval is conditioned on a municipal water use and conservation management plan. So you can, and DEP can, conditionally approve the WIMP, and I think this gives you the latitude to make findings that it's conditionally consistent with the plan.
So what I'd say in response is that I think it's clear from the executive order that the DEP has authority to make certain conditions, but the executive order, those provisions are not directed at the Highlands Council. So I would recommend that the Highlands Council conduct this consistency determination in accordance with the Regional Master Plan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions? Ready to vote on this?
I thought I'd ask public comment. I didn't see any other hands up. Come on up.
Okay.
My name is Laura Altman, and I am a resident of Pahatcom Township, and I know you just looked at a map that showed the site, and the developer or the attorney mentioned that it was surrounded on three sides. It's surrounded on two sides by dense development. That is true. I would dispute that it's surrounded on three sides, but it is the end of development, and what you can't see on the map is that beyond the site is an extremely large area of contiguous farms. It's so large that it supports a suite of breeding threatened and endangered grassland bird species, and it's one of only two sites in New Jersey that has so many breeding bird species of grassland birds because it's mostly undeveloped. And this site, where this development is going, was designated for grassland bird species because the habitat is suitable, since grasslands in New Jersey are farm fields. I also want to make the point that the township hasn't really grown in population since about World War II. And that's one reason why there's very dense development right next to farm fields. That Scheimer Manor was probably the last major development built, and that was a kind of a Levittown project. All the street names are like General MacArthur Boulevard and Liberty Boulevard, and that was the last major development built in Pohatcom Township. So it's not a growing community. It has basically lost population since about World War II. And the actual obligation for first and second round COA housing, I have the transcript of the Superior Court proceeding, was that the actual obligation was found to be 26 units in 1996. And one reason I think that nothing has been built is because most of the proposals have been for so many houses that the infrastructure couldn't support them. The original builder's remedy suit, the settlement, was going to be for 1,500 houses to satisfy an obligation of 98. The township only has 1,300 households in total. So 1,500 unit development would have been more than double the size of the town. And this was approved by the courts. So the courts aren't, you know, in the town. You've done a lot of studies now, and you have a better idea of what's actually on the ground. And I would suggest, you know, there was one of the comments in the staff review was that one of the wells in severe deficit was going to be drawing from the Delaware River, possibly, instead of from the sub-watershed Buckhorn Creek, I think it is. And I don't know that the Delaware River Basin Commission is aware that Aqua New Jersey may be drawing water from surface water of the Delaware, but that's something that we think, if that's where the water's going to come from, then the permit should be required to draw water from the Delaware. So I think that your staff did a really, really excellent job reviewing this project, and I think you can see from their comments there's some very good reasons that a lot of inconsistency was found in this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there other comments?
Good morning, everybody. Helen Heinrich, New Jersey Farm Bureau. I have a process question or a couple. Have these been, all of the five of them, been discussed at the Natural Resource Committee?
No.
To this extent?
No.
Is there some reason for that?
We're going to discuss after we get through these five our committee structure, but I think so that some of us have had the feeling that the discussions of the Natural Resource Council have been repeated almost in their entirety at council meetings, and it hasn't been an efficient use of anyone's time.
And also, I noticed that certain people seem to have some advance notice of these decisions and the information so that they can make comments. Are they posted on your website someplace?
They were posted, Helen, and then we had a comment period, and then we responded to the comments with track changes and again posted.
And how was the public notified?
Those that have signed up, we have a list service for each of these applications when they come in, and I think you can sign up for an agenda alert. I don't know if it gives you an alert when anything else is posted.
So you have to get on the list for each one of these amendments?
No, what I'm saying is we have an agenda alert where we have people sign up so that when we post an agenda, they get an alert. So we can see if we can get something similar. But I do want to remind you that our purpose in this is advisory. These go through a public comment process with DEP, and they go through a public comment process at the local level as well. So, but that's how we handled them. And
well, it's curious because I think I've applied to get on your agenda.
Excuse me, can you limit your comments now to this specific application? And we welcome suggestions for making the procedures better going forward.
Okay, well, I will work with you to do that, I hope.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out it was also announced at our last meeting the date when this was going to be posted on the website and that it would be open with the public comment period.
Yes.
Hello, my name is Peggy Snyder. I'm the consulting engineer for Echo Action Initiatives of Warren County. I just wanted to clarify something that I heard Mr. Yoskin state. He stated that this plan meets the stormwater regulations, and I would like to put on the record that it does not meet the stormwater regulations. In particular, it does not meet the recharge requirement, and the regulations do not permit waivers for the recharge requirement for the stormwater regulations. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? You already spoke, ma'am. Sorry. Other people? Council members, other discussion, questions? Ready to vote?
Yes. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Can I just respond to that comment?
Sure.
The stormwater rules, which are 7:7A8, actually do have specific provisions for waivers. When DEP grants a waiver from the recharge requirement, what the rules say is you have to recharge unless you demonstrate for a variety of reasons that you can't. So it's not like they're saying we're not applying the rule. Built into the rule is a waiver requirement, and that's what was the determination was made in this case, and it was only made, by the way, after a lengthy dialogue between the applicant, DEP, the Department of Agriculture, and the New Jersey Geological Survey regarding the karst topography. So it is not accurate to say that they don't comply with the stormwater rules. There's a specific finding by DEP in the Executive Order 109 analysis that the project complies with the stormwater rules. You can take issue with the rules, but the project complies with the rules.
Thank you. You have 30 seconds for a rebuttal.
Thank you. I would like for Mr. Yoskins to cite the part of the statute that permits a recharge waiver for karst. Because the waiver is simply for areas you don't want to recharge where there are unsuitable types of supplies being stored. There is no recharge waiver for karst permitted by the regulations.
I don't have the rules with me, but obviously. I'll be happy to talk to somebody with
you. Okay. Thank you. Yes. Other public comments? Council comments? Okay, we have the resolution in front of us and the staff recommendation. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. We move now to 11D, Holland Township.
In the matter of Holland Township, this is somewhat different to the others in that this is a town-wide WMP. The township, this proposes amendments that include adding to the approved sewer service area the Huntington Knolls project, which if you recall you actually reviewed before, added to that the Gardner project, which is Block 6. Lot 61 includes 2 3-bedroom rental apartments and 12 residential units, a future school expansion for 150 students, infill development of existing lots and future subdivision of new lots, would be 18 lots in total, and a future commercial development of 20,000 square foot. And just for purpose of clarification, for the purpose of a WMP review, the Highlands Council utilises the Highlands Council GIS data for Highlands domestic sewage facility existing areas served, defined in the Highlands Council Utility Capacity Technical Report as that portion of an approved sewer service area where existing infrastructure is in place, that is, pipes in the ground. Portions of an approved sewer service area without infrastructure in place are reviewed in concert with and under the same review criteria as any proposed future creation, expansion or extension of the service area, and are referred to as future sewer service area. And I bring that to your attention because sometimes it's confusing as to, we deal with existing areas served, pipes in the ground, everything else is considered future under the way we review things under our RMP and using our GIS data. This WMP proposes all portions of the town outside the sewage service area as general service area for wastewater facilities with planning flows of less than 2,000 GPD, which discharge to groundwater, that is septic systems. And the Highlands Council reviews these areas for consistency with the appropriate RMP policies. The Holland Township Wastewater Master Plan Consistency Determination found that there were many inconsistencies. Among these was the amendment to the WMP for extension of sewer service area into the conservation zone and the conservation environmentally constrained subzone, which is inconsistent with the policies and objectives of the Highlands Regional Master Plan. Alignment of the WMP with the RMP could best be achieved, and remember we're looking at a town-wide plan here, by a decision of Holland Township to pursue plan conformance and adopt the appropriate plan conformance standards to align their planning documents and development regulations with the RMP, and then incorporate the results into a revised wastewater management plan. But the town is split between planning and preservation area, so we know they'll work with us in the preservation area. It is up to them to decide what to do in the planning area.
We have a resolution in our packet. Someone like to introduce it?
So moved.
Janice moved. Tracy, thank you. Are there public comments on this application? Council comments?
We
have to sorry.
I'm Michael Cady, and I'm the president of an organization called Friends of Holland Highlands, which is a local citizens group in Holland Township. I'd like to start by first commending the staff for what was a very rigorous analysis. I thought it was excellently done. I had some comments that I sent in and was very gratified to see the other day when the revised version was posted that serious consideration was given to all those comments. Not all of them were adopted, but I felt I was treated very fairly, and the staff did a very good job in turning it around amazingly quickly. So I'm very gratified by this. I think it seems very obvious that the town is there's something like 8 elements in which they're consistent and 139 that they're inconsistent. So this is sort of like the, you know, the Yankees playing a little league game here, not a hard decision to make. There is one thing, though, I would say is, first of all, you gave a grant today to Holland. I looked at the thing and I kind of regarded it as pretty much a blueprint for what Holland is going to have to do in the 13% of the town that is within the preservation area, and certainly a guideline for what opting in would mean. So I hope they take that as a starting point for the grant that was given today. The final thing I just want to say is that despite this, there were no comments submitted by the township. There's nobody here today. However, at the last planning board meeting a week ago Monday, I did hear one of the people saying, you know, this is all stupid, and what we need to do is write a letter to the DEP and tell them to ignore all this for now. Get the darn thing approved. We've been waiting for 2 years to get this approved. Let's just go ahead with it, and then we'll deal with all this stuff later. Well, obviously, extending sewer service into Huntington Knolls and Galloway Farm is not something you can deal with later. If it gets done, it violates the conservation zone, and you're highly unlikely they're going to tear down the apartment buildings. So I my feeling is the township still doesn't understand what's really going on here, and they think that they can somehow pull this through the DEP, and I hope that the DEP takes the excellent work that was done here very seriously and sees that a score of 139-8 is not something you're going to grant WMP for. Thanks.
Other comments? My other comment is that, again, in the transmission letter to the DEP, that the conclusion has sort of what I call qualifying language, and that it needs to be clear, as Katie has outlined, that the application of the proposals is overwhelmingly inconsistent with the RMP standards. So to say it has, you know, some revisions that are fully or nearly consistent, but they are for the most part inconsistent, just the adjectives of qualifying to be in the mouth.
Truthfully, I think the object of the exercise here was to encourage them to work with us through plan components, but I take your point. It's nearly pregnant. Tracy.
I would reiterate Kim's comments. I had the same thought when I read this. And I would actually, I'm uncomfortable with the conclusion because I agree that this should be communicated to Holland Township, but I disagree that it should be part of the conclusions of a consistency document. I would suggest the alignment issue and discussion of conformance somehow strikes me as inappropriate in a conclusion related to a consistency requirement. I think it should be in a cover letter. And I'm also looking to avoid complaints that it's been argued that we're trying to backdoor forcing towns to conform. And this has the suggestion of that by including it in this place. And frankly, I just don't think it's necessary. If we're going, and it seems, but we haven't had our discussion yet, John, about the procedures, it seems as though we're inclined to provide straight up and down as consistent or it isn't. And here's where, that this doesn't belong there. I would suggest it be removed.
I'm not sure what you mean being removed.
The second sentence about alignment of the QMP could be best be achieved by a decision of Holland Township to pursue plan conformance and adopt the appropriate plan conformance standards. In a way, that's a duh. Yeah, we know that. And that's what we're hoping all of these towns will do. And I think it's appropriate to communicate that to them, maybe in the cover letter where they get their copy of this report. But it strikes me as not appropriate in this conclusion section of a consistency determination.
To me, the reason I asked the question to Tim before when we had this, it seems to me the conclusion of the letter ought to be identical because otherwise it's going to be confusing. I mean, so
it can elaborate. It can say you're not consistent, yeah. But you know you really could be if you work with us. I don't think
right.
That becomes a recommendation.
Right.
I'm not making recommendations.
I do think from the earlier discussion, let me just get one thing through, that I think we were all agreeing that the first sentence should be essentially reversed, so it would say the management plan is for the most part inconsistent with the RMP policy's objectives, although some provisions are fully or nearly consistent. I mean, that was the point to have made.
It's very easy for us right. To make these, and I get the message. Just be right. Clear and concise. It is not consistent in many areas, etc. Factual statements, not things that we can otherwise put in the letter to the applicant that might encourage them to conform. That's how you like to see it done. That's usually done.
I would do that.
And we will do so.
Comments, questions? So is that enough guidance, council members, in terms of the passed the resolution with the understanding that it's modified? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Getting opposed? Discussions? Okay. And the fifth one, 11E.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I have a 11E.
Okay. Thank you for being here.
Okay, we're just waiting for people to find their documents.
Oh, I know.
Okay. The final one we're going to review today is different from all those that went before. And I did advise the council of how we were proceeding with this, and then was determined that your direction would be as of today. The review was posted September 9th, and the applicant and service list were notified, as in the other cases. This is the first, and it's probably the only instance, of a review that was considered administratively complete and subject to formal public comment prior to council adoption of the RMP. It was then revised and submitted for council consideration following the RMP adoption. The staff Trump WQMP amendment review was discussed before the Natural Resource Committee on February 14th of 2008 with opportunity for public comment. The applicant provided testimony before the committee and provided additional documentation based on the staff draft review. The amendment was on the March 6, 2008 council agenda and so would have been considered by the council at that time, but we pulled it the day before the meeting so that additional information could be provided. Any changes in the proposed WQMP amendment since then have been the result of the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection decision their decision-making regarding one open issue, and that was the proposed beneficial reuse of EDC-treated effluent. That was in the original application before us. That has been resolved such that the EDC beneficial reuse proposal is no longer part of the proposed project. Hence, the staff review has to be revised to reflect that change. Overall, staff believes that the inconsistencies would be little changed, if any, between the final draft and the adopted RMP. In either case, a finding of inconsistent would be the result, primarily due to the proposed amount of consumptive depleted water use. Given the fact that the proposal was considered administratively complete, that the initial staff review was subject to both public comment and Natural Resource Committee discussion, and that the amended review response to public comment, primarily applicant provided information and NJDEP decisions, continued review under the final draft RMP is felt to be the most appropriate approach and does not change the recommendation that NJDEP not adopt this amendment until consistency is achieved. So that's the approach we took on the Trump matter. Therefore, with Trump you have the checklist, which was revised September 9th, 2008, for the reasons I've just spoken of. And you have what we gave you in the old form. You have a memorandum, which has the project description, and then ends with the recommendations, because this is done in our old matter under a draft regional master plan. The Highlands Council staff provides the following specific recommendations for consideration by the Highlands Council based on the final draft RMP. As stated earlier, the Highlands Council reserves the right not stated earlier, but stated now, the Highlands Council reserves the right to review the application utilising the adopted RMP. We wanted to make sure that was there for your consideration today. In summary, the staff recommends that NJDEP not approve the application unless it is modified to address the following inconsistencies. Number one, environmentally sensitive areas. The review of the proposed WQMP-WMP amendment reveals several inconsistencies with the final draft RMP, including the proposed disturbance of Highlands open water protection areas, riparian areas, forest resource areas, prime groundwater recharge areas, and critical habitat. These areas should be avoided by the project, except where NJDEP determines, using more site-specific information, that the resource constraints do not exist, which may include proof of previous site modifications based on valid municipal approvals. The applicant apparently has provided NJDEP with sufficient information regarding critical habitat to make such a proof. Water availability. The project's proposed water use would exceed water availability for the three source subwatersheds and would create or exacerbate water availability deficits. The applicant should prove that the project will not exceed net water availability, will not exceed the conditional water availability, and will provide 125% mitigation or consumptive or depleted water uses from current deficit areas. As the applicant is seeking a modified water allocation permit, the net water availability analysis should be based on the most recent annual water use data available.
We have a resolution in our packet on this. Would you like to introduce it? No. Second.
Second.
comments on this application?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ed Russo, and I am here on behalf of Donald Trump and the Trump Organization. We have reviewed the staff report, studied it, understand it very well, and we're very happy and proud today to come here and state that we will adhere to both recommendations of both staff and your council. Specifically, and I will have data to provide you if you'd like, but the first recommendation is because of an extension of the sewer service area into an area, even though it is an existing road, and we planned to build these cottages on that particular road, rather than delay the application any longer, we're removing the cottages and any disturbance from that particular area. So we're withdrawing that from the official application. Secondly, with regard to the 125% recharge, that took us a little bit more time to work out, but we finally did it, and we certainly have all the data and the locations. The amazing thing that we were able to achieve is that we were able to do it all on site. You know, we obviously studied what you've done in the past. There were some off-site opportunities, but we were able to do that on site, and so we are ready, willing, and able to comply with both recommendations.
Questions?
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, so I guess I'm a little confused. Are you in compliance with those recommendations or not? And is the project consistent or isn't it consistent with the RMP? Those are conditional recommendations predicated on some future action.
Which is fine with us.
I got a question. If we took no action and they resubmitted their application, or modified their application, a new staff reviewed them.
We would prefer that you approve it as written, and then we will comply.
So you will basically be saying to DEP that you're willing to comply with these conditions.
Yes, sir. I mean, if we couldn't comply, I would be here begging for some kind of help. But the first one was easy; the second one was tough. We are willing to invest these funds and. And all the other work that's necessary in making sure that 125% of the water that we use will be recharged into the existing aquifer on site.
Did I ask you how you're going to do that just briefly? It's something we've been talking about, how people are going to be able to achieve that.
Well, what we've done, and if I could show you how we go about doing all the contour, so with the calculations in a drought, you can see all this. 87 million gallons of water falls on this 506 acres every year in a drought year. The magic is to go through the calculations and provide all of the areas where we can have recharge. And again, all of the areas are here, and sometimes they're very hard to see, but all the detention basins, the WMP, the best management practice recharge areas, made it very challenging. What we had to stop last week and say, wait a minute, we're a golf course, and we have, believe it or not, 8 acres of bunkers, eight acres of sand traps, which are perfect recharge areas. And we added that to it. That was only a few million gallons, but that put us over what we really needed to do. So because of the complex nature of the golf course, and because we have all these different hubs, we were able to either modify the existing recharge ponds or take credit for the ones that were there in the first place. It's quite involved. I'm not sure if we're the only ones that can do it, but this is a very challenging achievement, and we were able to do it. We passed it by a few million gallons a year.
So you did that by using your sand traps?
Well, sand traps. The sand traps were just, the bunkers were just the last few gallons that we had to work on. But there are enormous existing recharge areas. At the meeting on January 14th, I invited the staff members and members of the council out there. You see for yourself, it's just remarkable what we've been able to do. With the water allocation permit requests of 34 million gallons for this particular 18 holes, we have 48 million gallons worth of storage. And that was one of the big achievements that we've been able to do. It was expensive. You can see the type of
the ponds that were there. There were no ponds on the site that were natural. We had to get all of them. So by making all these ponds and all the drainage areas coming from the ponds going into recharge areas, it's the only way to make this work. It's very difficult. I'm not sure anybody else that doesn't have assets like this can make it work, unless they go off site and take credit for something that they're not doing.
I'm still not satisfied that you demonstrated to us that you are in need to do that. You just talked about those were in conceptual terms. As I remember the last time I considered this, there were outstanding questions about the water allocation permit, about the ability to meet the recharge, in addition to the sewer line coming out and the additional use line coming out. And I don't hear that those have been resolved yet, so I don't understand why this initial in front of us. Those issues are still, which were inconsistencies that were in the report. The applicant should reduce the amount of consumptive water used for irrigation so that it does not exceed the water availability. Well, the other way to see that is the planned water use exceeds the water availability. So we haven't given conditional consistency determinations yet. That's a good reading, sir.
Excuse me, I think this was resubmitted since the plan was adopted, so it has to be reviewed anew. Is that correct?
No.
Dan, you want to pick up?
I think the thing that I would point out is that the staff recommendation is and would remain that DEP not approve this unless they find that the applicant has addressed these two inconsistencies. It's not our job to determine how the applicant is going to address the inconsistencies. It's our job to note that they are inconsistent. And then it's up to DEP to determine how they're going to do it. Our difficulty before was that with the EDC transfer and the use of the on-site water, it was very difficult for us to figure out what the situation was. Now it's crystal clear because EDC is completely out of the picture. We just are dealing with on-site water use, and therefore we were able to make a crystal clear inconsistency finding for the issue of water availability. It now points to DEP.
Okay. I don't consider it a punt, but can you point me to the language that says that the water availability is inconsistent with the RNP? That's my point.
It says the project's proposed water use would exceed the water availability from the three source sub-watershed. And
I think the confusion is that you're reading, it says that in the September 9th memo. It doesn't say that, at least in the same way, in the checklist we've been reviewing for the other major forests. I'm going to say that very clearly.
The September 9th memo absolutely says that.
Right.
Conclusions and recommendations, are you talking about?
No, September to you.
Or are you talking about recommendations underneath wastewater?
Memo to the council from.
Yeah. I'm just wondering where he's reading from.
That's what Dan was reading from. Okay. Right. So the resolution of what we would send to DEP is not just the consistency determination, or it's not just.
We would send the checklist. We would also send the memo with the recommendations on the end, because we're doing this under the old process,
right.
Not the
old
new.
Form.
Right. And if you, Mr. Chair,
yeah.
If you look at the checklist, it says the review of the proposed amendment reveals several inconsistencies with the draft RMP, and then it lists them.
Right.
Riparian open waters. Riparian areas, forest resource, prime groundwater recharge, critical habitat, and then the discussion about exacerbating the net water availability deficits. So that is in there. But I have another question.
Let me just say with that question. So going back to the issue of what's in the cover letter, I would assume the cover letter would be essentially the end of the September 9th memo.
We could do that, and then the recommendations as well, both into the letter.
Right.
Okay. I would think the conclusion. I want to make it clear that we really, I mean, our option here is to vote on releasing this as we have been voting on the other ones with the inconsistencies identified here and the summary and conclusions, or to not vote at all. And I think the applicant was saying I'd rather hear you go ahead and vote than withdraw this from the vote. But I just want to make clear that, I mean, certainly we cannot consider verbal testimony that needs to be then resubmitted through the plan process
right.
In our decision.
Right. I think what we're hearing is the applicant is willing to work or plans to work with DEP to address the deficiencies we found. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be identifying deficiencies.
Okay, and then one last thing. I would object to one phrase that Mr. Van Ass used, unless DEP decides that the deficiencies are addressed. I don't think we should start going down that road to say that unless DEP makes a decision otherwise. We're just stating what the inconsistencies are. That's what we're doing. And we're making it clear, is it consistent or inconsistent with the plan? And I think that phrase is not appropriate, and we shouldn't start using that phrase when we are discussing whether or not DEP is going to take our recommendation or listen to our staff and council decision about consistency.
I didn't hear Dan's comments being any different than that.
Well, he said unless DEP decides that the deficiencies are addressed in some way.
But we're not saying that.
It says DEP not approve unless it's modified to address the following inconsistencies. So that's the memo language. Mm-hmm. With regard to the issues like critical habitat, these are DEP data layers, and the RMP very specifically provides for DEP being consulted with regarding whether those maps are actually correct on a site-specific basis. That was the way that phrase comes in. But I understand your issue, and you can certainly be careful about that.
Yeah, I don't think we should be saying that in our conclusions that we send on to DEP.
Are there any other public comments on this application? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Hi again, I'm Judith Woods. I live in the adjacent township to Holland Township. And my only question to the council is that he's talking about recharging the amount of water. I'm concerned about the quality of water that's going into the recharge from a golf course. There's a lot of chemicals that are used. And if all those chemicals are going back into your aquifer, I just think that should be definitely considered. If they're going to be then drawn out by people's wells, what's the impact of that? Thank you.
I want to ask actually Tracy a question. I agree with the comments you make. Are you suggesting we delete that third paragraph from the conclusions?
Well, reword it so it doesn't say unless DEP decides that these inconsistencies have been addressed.
I didn't know if we were talking about the same thing. My comment is, again, we have this third paragraph actually states recommendation. I didn't think we wanted to be doing that. And these that was my question then. Is it only because it's
yes.
under some old format?
Yes.
We have that
yes, absolutely.
We're going to add to that. The very last line of the checklist says council does reserve the right to review the application utilizing the adopted RMP in the first line of the review framework should the council be necessary. Likewise, that's very clear. But it needs to be a clear statement that there are elements of this project which are inconsistent with the RMP, which we've been doing today.
Mm-hmm.
So I trust this in the chairman's comments that the letter will say exactly that, as opposed to the language in here about not approved unless it's modified. Because the ability to meet those standards hasn't been reached yet.
Okay. Other comments, questions? Ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Abstention?
Thank you.
Thank you. Can I just check, we still have members on the phone?
That's me.
Yes, John, I'm still here.
Hi, Scott. Okay. And Denisha, are you there?
Mr. Chair, before we proceed, I really wanted to call out and thank the staff that had done this work because it was very difficult as a starting point to get this work done and get these new checklists. And I wanted to just call out in no particular order, but Chris Ross, Jim Hutzelman, Casey Ozyski, Aaron Lyneham, and Erica Webb in particular. There were a lot of other staff involved, but in particular, they put a ton of time and effort into this, and as usual, under time constraints, because we always ask them to work speedier.
Thank you. All right. We turn now to item 13 on the agenda.
Can I make a break? Such half of us are leaving it.
There is no such thing as a five-minute break, I've learned. So.
Mr. Chair, there are three matters that we discussed handling under number 13 on the agenda. The first was in light of the WQMP amendments you've just handled, the discussion as to how to move forward and use of committees. Also, the redevelopment area designation procedures, and lastly, the scenic resources procedures. That was the evaluation and inventory of those. Do you want to start with the WQMP?
Sure. Because my
feeling. There's no paperwork on this.
There's no document on this.
Yeah, let's pull that.
As I said to, I guess, all of you in email, I thought two things related, but let's focus on the water quality plan amendments first. There are a number of decisions, a lot of decisions are going to come before the council in the months ahead as we move into this implementation phase. And there are, you can divide them into two categories, of those that where the council's action, as in what we just discussed, where the council's action is a recommendation to another state agency, and those where our decision is a final decision. It seemed to me, but I know others disagree, so we should discuss it, that for those matters where we are making a recommendation to another state agency, that we could delegate that to the staff to make those recommendations. We just spent a little over an hour and a half reviewing five water quality plan amendments, and I think in the course of our discussion, we clarified the wording on how those recommendations should be made in a way that's helpful, that will probably be universal going forward. It's not just helpful to these, but will be universal. I'm not sure what else we accomplished doing that except to be a little more informed about those projects and thinking about the amount of work we're going to have to do to work with 88 towns and the counties on them coming into conformance with the plan. It seemed to me that it might be a good thing for the council to delegate those reviews for water quality plan amendments, for water allocation permits, and a couple other things where we're going to be making, where the council's comments are advisory, and we have this staff that we keep saying how wonderful it is, and they do these reviews, and we should, as long as there was a process where we were kept very informed of what was before the staff and what recommendations they would make, they were bringing out up, that might be a better use of our time. What are other people's comments?
I would just say, though, that I found it very informative, just reviewing the staff's recommendations, to just know what's going on out there. So maybe we should continue doing it this way. I mean, their reviews are very thorough, and I think we really don't challenge them particularly, but I think just having them come before us is helpful.
I would disagree. I think that we didn't do anything today except agree with what the staff had to say.
We did.
And that doesn't add any value to the amount of time that we spent. We're going to have to add another meeting a month to be able to do that. I think that if the members are really interested in it, you ought to review it, you ought to post it or send it out to the members in advance. And any member that feels that the staff recommendation isn't consistent with what they think, can bring it before the whole council and ask for a vote to consider. But I don't see how you process. Organizationally, it's terrible to redo work that staff has already done. It's not very efficient.
I don't see it as a contradiction of what the staff does. I find the position between Mimi's and yours to be where we ought to go. I think that it's very informative and very useful for the council to go over these WQMP amendments. Whether we change anything substantively or not, it doesn't take all that much time. If we have 100 before us at a particular meeting, that might be a different story. We had, six here?
Five.
We spent a long time on it. And in that process, we refine some of the language that these interpretations and determinations may incorporate as we go forward. I think that was very useful because we all came on board with those determinations and that language. So and I don't know the number yet, so maybe that's what we need to flesh out and better inform us as to whether we can make your decision. But I think there's a value in reviewing these at this point. I like the idea of doing that, but I also agree with you that we should operate.
Well, maybe what we do is we form a committee of all of the people that are really interested in
we were there with the Natural Resource Committee, and then the full council wasn't comfortable delegating it. I mean, that is, boards like this do that, delegate these kind of reviews to subcommittees, and that's another option.
I like the staff doing it rather than the subcommittee of the council, because the council is very opinionated. Whether you're on one side of the opinion or another, you are very opinionated. We all are. I like the idea that the staff has no action right here, no dog in the fight, so to speak.
The staff is at the committee to review the staff recommendation.
That's what we're doing. Not the whole council.
Let me ask this, I should ask the beginning, but I'd ask Eileen to look at what Primelands did and see if that was instructive for us at all.
At the request of the chair, I called John Stokes, executive director of the Pinelands, and the Pinelands does do the WQMP reviews as well. They, just like ourselves, are advisory to the DEP. It's purely a staff review. At their monthly meeting, the executive director provides a monthly management report in which he reports out on jobs that the staff has done, and he reports out on these. They have no public process because they, as he pointed out, he said that it's done at the Department of Environmental Protection and it's also done by the local entities. So that's how they manage these. And in talking with him, it was really a question again of them focusing their work. And he did explain, because I asked him to be a little more explicit about what committees they have, etc. They have five standing committees, Policy and Implementation Committee, that looks at any changes to the Pinelands plan. John Stokes reviews the staff recommendations with that committee. Local master plan and zoning approvals are looked at. John Stokes is authorized to sign off on many of them without review. If they use, like for example, if they use a sample ordinance that the Pinelands has provided, then they don't need to go before that committee for review. That's sort of logical. But if there's any deviations brought before the committee, that committee meets once a month. Personnel and budget, they meet as well on an as-needed basis. Public and government programs, major public program initiatives. The staff keeps the committee informed of any agreements, for example, with local or state governments to streamline permitting. And he gave me an example of they're doing a master plan with Stockton College. So in case they discussed that at that committee meeting. They talk about education programs, and they hear reports on legislation and state regs. And John Stokes testifies on behalf of the Commission and provides comments on state regulations. The fourth committee they have, which meets about every 3 months, is a science committee that looks at scientific research and setting priorities. And they have a permanent land protection committee, which meets once every 3 months. They actually have funding. They've got a Pinelands Conservation Fund, so they have monies which they use. And Conservation Resources, which is a group that assists in land acquisition, they assist that committee in going after certain lands and protecting them. Those are the Pinelands Commission member committees.
Mr. Chairman? I think it's interesting what the Pinelands does. I think one difference is that they're a more mature program. We are looking at water quality management plans at this moment that were really developed long before ours. And I think it's a little heavier lift in terms of making the inconsistencies that we're seeing as opposed to inconsistencies they may be seeing in the Pinelands. But I would just like to say, I think, we
have a responsibility to review these plans, and in many instances, it's going to be the only way that we are able to have input into planning in areas in the planning area. And I think that we shouldn't take that. I know that assigning it to staff is, the staff review is essential, and I totally think that they're doing a great job. I like the reformatted checklist. But I think that it's very important that we, as a council, deliberate on the findings from the checklist and the review done by the staff, because there are issues as we move forward in implementing the RMP and trying to bring water quality management plans in to be consistent with the RMP. There are issues that the council is going to run up against, and we've already run up against some. And I think that the discussion that we have, which delves into the details, broadens our understanding of the water quality management plans, and I think it also broadens the understanding of the towns that are coming forward, for instance, or the applicants that are coming forward. And I think that that responsibility to use other routes besides opting in and the mandatory implementation of the RMP are very, such as through the water quality management planning process, are very, very important. And we shouldn't denigrate them to being somehow less important only because they're advisory. And I think, we went from having the Natural Resources Committee look at this and then make recommendations to the council to then considering having the Natural Resources Committee make decisions on its own, which the council was not comfortable with. And now we're at the point where nobody on the council will be deliberating on these, and only those who are interested may read them. And I think that really takes it down from being a major responsibility to being a footnote. And I think at this point in our evolution as a council, we really shouldn't be doing that. We need to stay on top of these plans in a detailed way, be looking at how our policies are playing out. And I think the reason we find it so interesting is because we're seeing the first applications of all of our planning. And I think that is in itself is a reason to continue our discussion of them publicly. Also, I think it would be very awkward to have a public process, which of course we are committed to continuing to do. You had said that in emails, everyone had said that there would continue to be public input on this. But to have the public coming and bringing to the council concerns, and then, the applicant sometimes being in the chair and we're not deliberating on it, it's very awkward. And I think it makes sort of a sham of that process because we're not deciding, it's the staff. So I don't see what the point would even be of a public process if we're going to have staff reviews. At case on point is that the finalist doesn't even have a public process associated with their staff reviews. So
you saw this, the ones we just went through, the public written public comments were reviewed by the staff and the staff recommendations incorporated. So.
Yes, but then the council reviewed it.
No, I understand, but the public comments were included.
Yes, but that's
I just comment one thing here. I think Tim said it best. Anybody presenting new information to us at this point is not going to change, I think, our opinion and say it's consistent now. I think that's part of the process that I have to struggle with. I don't have a problem with anything that you said. But when somebody comes in and says, oh, okay, I fixed it all, here it is. We're not going to say, okay, now it's consistent. And on the other hand, I don't think that we're going to argue honestly amongst ourselves that the staff did a bad job, and therefore, if they say it's consistent, we're going to find it inconsistent in the aggregate. So what I struggle with is this dance that we go through, where the result doesn't change, and the information that the public shares with us has no impact on our decision process. It's all done at the staff level anyhow.
I would just say, you know, I don't want to debate it, but...
But in this process, we are.
But I would just say that...
I think it's a dangerous slope.
Yeah, it is. And I wouldn't say that it had no impact just because the decision was consistent with the staff recommendations. We still deliberated, and we voted as a council, and everybody thought about it and read the documents ahead, and... So I wouldn't say that there, just because it didn't change, that there was no impact.
And I would argue, Bill, that we could decide to table some of these based on what we hear. Just because we didn't do that today doesn't mean there aren't going to be circumstances or something is brought to our attention that might change a decision. And I think as to openness and transparentness, you can't argue that making a decision in public by a body of 15, hopefully someday, 15 people, is far different from staff, essentially, whether they got public input or not, the decisions being made behind closed door and being announced. And that's far different from what we did today. And last but not, actually it's still not my last, this body wasn't willing to delegate the decision to a subcommittee of council members, but now is going to consider delegating it to the staff. I think that's very inconsistent with how we've evolved. But I think it worked very well today. This is exactly what I had anticipated to happen, and the staff does the heavy lifting. We review it. Probably in most cases we're going to ask some questions. We may make a change here and there, but it's, I think the process worked very well today.
I think part of it's a question of whether the council meets once a month or twice a month. So that's one issue, is when, you know, how much time all of us have.
That depends on the number.
But one fundamental change, I really don't mind reviewing them here, but at what end now? Because we went from recommending now to just determining consistency. And I don't necessarily like the fact that we can only measure consistency. I wish that we had a role that was more substantive. I've got personal opinions about all these things we did today. But if our role is strictly to measure consistency against the plan, one thing that the benchmark we set in developing the plan was for it to be objective and not subjective, so that you can look at a map, it's black and white, you're in, you're out, you may not agree whether you should be in or out, but the fact is now it's objective. So to me, the staff can do the bulk of the work here, and we're really just rubber stamping.
But didn't you hear the conversations we had about what the conclusions are? That's not black and white.
Well, but I think now, again, I think Trump was the old rules. Now it's just we're measuring yes or no's and C's and I's. I think, you know, we're using C's and I's. It's either consistent or inconsistent. And the DEP takes all that and digests it in whatever big incubator they have down there and figures it all out for us. For our own good.
One of the things Finance Commission does that we do when the applicant comes before the staff, for example, to discuss these, and then it makes recommendations on how consistency can be achieved. And it's up to the applicant to determine whether or not they want to undertake those. DEP can do the same thing. But if we give the DEP some guidance that we have passed on to make those applications consistent, I think that's a good thing. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. But that shouldn't be in what our determinations from our information from the staff is. I agree that we should not ask about whether we're steering or rowing. I think we're steering. I'm sure we're steering. We don't want to do the rowing. The staff's doing that work. But in the process, I think that it would not be a bad thing for us to aid applicants in achieving conformance and by having a recommendation from the staff in the form of a letter, for example, that goes down to the DEP along with our determination of consistency. I don't think that's the bad thing at all. So I'd like to see that happen as well.
So in the case of just the just for people who haven't spoken yet, does anybody, any of you have comments on this, or Scott does?
I guess words count in the sense of I don't see council's participation in oversight function of this as rubber stamping. I think. You know, it is an important point that because the staff did an excellent job on these reviews and provided the material very clearly, it doesn't mean that won't always happen. I think the water quality management planning elements are really key parts of what determines what happens on the landscape. And I think that that's, you know, the passion with which we've debated this thing for a year now is indicative of how important a role it is. And as the towns move in, the counties particularly move into the area wide water quality plans and doing the broader ones, I think there's going to be places where councils' decision making and things are going to be important in that. So I think it is a mistake to delegate it totally. I think this is a fairly effective process. I don't know that it will have a lot of these individuals as the state's water quality planning process shifts over. It will get down to a county basis.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
Well,
Mr.
Chairman, for sake of moving on, can we vote on what we're going to do? And I only have one recommendation, that comments on these by the members be kept to a minute. And then
we'll move them along.
Mr. Chair, can I speak just on, on behalf of the staff? We're not going to be just doing consistency determinations for WQMPs. I think the chair sent out that there's a series of things we're going to be doing them on. And the staff will do whatever we're asked to do. We're obviously capable of doing whatever you direct us to do. However, the staff are extremely hardworking. And the work is just beginning on implementation. We're going to be looking at a series of plans. We're going to be working with municipalities. The load isn't before us now. It will be. So all I want to tell you is that when we delivered on a November 17th date for release of the 2007, we delivered on the day. We said July 17th for the RMP final adoption. We delivered on the day. The legislature, in its imprint system, decided on 15 months for conformance, which we all know is unreasonable. EO 114 has just added, perhaps, an incentive for the other than the 52 municipalities that must work with us for at least part of the municipality, a further 36 that will now, because of the timelines for COA, also pressure, most likely, to be heard before those 15 months are up. And the concern isn't what we're doing today. The concern is that to say that you're leaving it up to the staff, you're not. You devised the plan. You said all shall be measured against this. You didn't, I hope, leave any room for a subjective analysis. It either is consistent or it isn't consistent. And if there's a middle ground, well, then we better straighten it out if we find one, because it needs to be one or the other, or in some cases not applicable. I will tell you that in terms of meeting dates and delivering in the way we always have, I believe that it's going to be incredibly difficult in a few months. And any suggestion that this council will be able to do these at once monthly meetings, along with reviewing different kinds of plans that will be coming before us through conformance, it will. And then you will presumably have, I don't know how you're going to handle, but if we're going to be bringing components from different towns for conformance analysis and for your decision on that, you're going to have to meet on those as well. So any idea that you're going to be doing this in one month, meeting a month, is absolutely not going to be manageable.
Do you have a number?
Number of what?
Number of WQMPs that we're going to be reviewing?
Well, currently the county's meant to be taking those over and doing them county-wide for all municipalities. Right, but Warren has, for example, has already said that they won't be doing that, so that means we'll be getting them piece by piece from the different towns, which will require, as you can imagine, a lot of review. But the other consistency determinations for water allocation permits, we're going to be having them. They'll be similar to an amendment, so every time there's a water allocation permit, we'll be required to do a consistency determination. Capital, state, and local unit projects in the planning area, development applications submitted to municipalities and counties in conforming jurisdictions, and Highlands applicability determinations. We'll be doing consistency determinations on all of those. Again, just a simple, I shouldn't say simple because staff would kill me, but an analysis of whether it is consistent or inconsistent. But so an actual number we don't know, because we don't know when an allocation permit is going to be requested. So on an as-needed basis, we have to respond.
Are we likely to have any of these, do you know, at this point on the agenda for our next October meeting?
I believe we have one before us at the moment, or two. There's Hamilton Golf Club. Just that one at the moment.
Mr. Chairman, would it be possible to simply accept the staff recommendations and the staff determinations and on a trial basis and see how that works for the next month, 2 months, 3 months, or just some finite date. And if that works fine, in the end, you know, we're talking speculatively now, I understand. And, you know, I'm very much in favor of having information come to me, as I think all council members are. But I also recognize the burden that we might be subjecting ourselves to. So I'd like to try it and see what happens. If it doesn't work out, we can change it.
Why wouldn't we go the other way? It's working the way it is. And I would just like to point out, if you think an hour and a half on five water quality management plan amendments, you think about what that is, that's 18 minutes per plan. So if we have one coming up, that's not a four-hour meeting. So, I mean, actually, it was pretty efficient, and mainly because of, you know, the detailed work that was done by the staff.
Well, there's more to it than that. When we prepare for the meetings, preparing of the documentation for the meetings takes time as well. There are resolutions that would no longer be done if you changed it to a staff recommendation. It would be done.
But the resolutions are pretty pro forma, right? I mean, the real essence of is the preparation of the checklist and all this.
That's right.
What you're sending DEP. So if you do that and just have a pretty much standard resolution,
we also bring the staff also sit through the meeting, because if something comes up, I don't want them to call them in from the outside, because they have to have listened to the discussion. So they're in the room as well for these. So.
And also,
we should think very deeply discussing other stuff.
That 18 minutes included public, too, and presentations by the applicant, and we'll still have that part. We really didn't spend that much time on each one.
I'm looking ahead as well.
12 minutes?
I'd like to make a motion that we vote on whether or not to allow staff recommendations to carry the day for the next 3 months and see how that works out.
So we vote to allow staff recommendations?
To allow staff recommendations.
I'll second.
Discussion.
So,
so that I would assume the proposal that at our meetings in October, November, and December, part of Eileen's report would be that we had the staff make the following recommendations on water plan amendments, and the recommendation would be in our packet.
What happens when a member has a question? So we're presented with a list of the four applications that they went through, and it's simply going to say, Joe John's garage application, inconsistent. Well, Executive Director, I'm familiar with this project. Can you explain to me why it was consistent when I think
that will be in the determination. That will be on the checklist.
But we would also send them to you, as we have done in this case. We would send them to you, we would post them, we'd take the public comment, we revise them, track changes. We think that's a good process, and we actually got comments from people who appreciated that process from the public. So you would be alerted at the time that it goes up as well. So you review it. If you've got a question, you do what you always do, Kurt, you call me.
I think that I want to achieve what you want to achieve, but I think for us to achieve it, we first have to gain more confidence. When I say we as a council, maybe not me personally, but I think we need to gain confidence as a council that the staff recommendations are consistent with the way that we would act. And I think for that to happen, we need to continue to take the action on them right now ourselves, like we do today.
We've reviewed, I don't know how many water quality plan amendments before adoption of the plan.
Yeah.
And change not a word of the staff's recommendations on those.
Because I think if we go with your recommendation today, and I'm comfortable with it, but I'm afraid that we're going to spend just as much time because there's going to be questions.
I think that's anticipatory, and that's why I'm suggesting that between now and the end of the year, we see how it works out. If we have questions and we find it doesn't work out, we can stop this any time. We're drivers. We're steering the boat.
Can I ask a question? Is this all premised on the fact that we will have only one meeting a month?
I suspect, is that why we're trying to do this?
Well, it could be 6-7 hours.
No, you may have more meetings anyway. You've got on an as-needed basis on through conformance.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to, this isn't a way out of meetings. So.
I mean, I don't think if two meetings a month would be
I don't know either. Let's work it out for 3 months and see how it happens.
But we won't even know what we're missing if we're out.
It doesn't seem to be as good a majority in favor of your motion.
We'll see.
But I think you should vote, and then
motion goes down, then we're in effect doing the opposite. We continue as we are and see what happens. And if it might be out of here before 2 to today, and so that's fine. Are there any other comments on the motion before we go on? Sure. Oh, yeah, show of hands, I guess, so we can. All those in favor? 3. Scott, are you still here?
Okay. So, I'm here.
Did you hear the motion, and are you voting for or against it?
I'm sorry, I did step away for a little bit, so I'll.
You want to go along with Jack, Scott?
Scott, even I'm not going along with Jack.
You're passing. All right. Well, the motion is not going to pass, so we'll leave things as they are in that regard. And in terms of the committee structure, my proposal is that we keep the audit evaluation, budget, finance, and personnel committees, and that for pretty much everything or everything else, we work as a full council on those. And we'll go forward and hopefully get to the point where we get the committees. Okay. But then we're not done.
No, you're just not
done. Everybody's talking about rowing and steering. I'm reminded of Judy Ben-Hur, chained to this ship, and Jack Hawkins' character comes down the steps and says, "We keep you alive to serve this ship. Row well and live."
Am I meant to thank you for that, sir?
Next item.
Yes, I'm sorry. The next item before you is the consideration. We have two resolutions, actually, on these issues. The first is the procedures for the Highlands redevelopment area designations. And I'm sorry if I'm looking for mine. Oh, you don't have my notes. What do you do? Sorry. Thank you. The Highlands Redevelopment Area Designation Procedures. On June 16th, 2008, the Highlands Council released a revised procedure for the designation of redevelopment areas in the preservation area, along with a summary of changes from the draft procedures of May 2007. Comments were received by July 16th, 2008, and the Council has prepared a summary of the public comments received on that June 2008 draft, along with proposed Council responses. A final procedure has been developed for council review. Staff recommends adoption of the procedure. And we included in your packet the summary of public comments and responses to the draft redevelopment site designation procedures, the summary of public comments and responses consolidated into 17 different categories, and finally the procedures and the resolution. I just wanted to make sure everybody's aware these are for the preservation area, because it's a two-step process in the preservation area. We do the designation, and then the Department of Environmental Protection works on the actual site review, and then whatever waivers are necessary that are practical to allow to the minimum extent to allow the project to move forward. In terms of the planning area, we're going to be doing both sides of that equation, so we will. There'll be significantly more work involved there. So before you today, these procedures are for just in the preservation area.
And we have a resolution to adopt the procedures. So someone want to move the resolution?
I'll move the resolution.
For a second.
Second.
Okay. Comments, questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have two thoughts. The first is in the definition section. I guess in the definitions of Highlands redevelopment, your language has been added that the purpose of redevelopment is to transform an underutilized or distressed area into an economically viable and productive part of the community. It seems to me that one of the rules we want redevelopment sites in the preservation area in particular to function as is growth centers. Right? That's where we want the development to go. And the Act envisions that we would waive standards when appropriate to allow that to happen. So it seems that we ought to articulate that purpose as well, that the purpose of the redevelopment is also to concentrate growth or accommodate growth and development which might otherwise occur in locations inconsistent with the RMP, And then just a thought this morning, given the EO's directive to us about affordable housing, to provide opportunities or to advance opportunities for affordable housing. So the mixed use idea in these redevelopment areas. I am concerned that, and this is something that plays out in the center concept everywhere, that we not end up with high density development surrounded by sprawl. So because we intensify the use of a given site, even if it's been previously disturbed, doesn't mean we're going to leverage any greater amount of conservation in there. You see, that's part of the principle of it. So I wanted to suggest that language, that purpose language that was there, be expanded to include those other purposes. And then the second thought I had on page 9 is in 3, basically laying out the burden that the redevelopment area would have to become consistent with the resource protection smart growth standards. I just think I had a great conversation with Mr. Gordon about this. I just think it's important that we want to acknowledge or articulate in there that the council may impose conditions and requirements in order to ensure that compliance. His opinion was that it was implicit in that language. I just worry that some attorney is going to pick up and say to us, there's no explicit authority for you in these redevelopment designations to impose TDR or smart growth principles. So we ought to specifically say we might do that in order to make sure that it's as close to the RMP as possible.
Is that necessary to do?
There's no harm to make it explicit.
Can we not do it anyway?
Yeah, yes, but there's no harm to make it explicit either. So.
Well, I would suggest we make it explicit generically at the beginning in the purpose and scope section to say that the following establishes procedures for which an applicant something make some reference in there that's consistent with the regional master plan.
Okay.
We can make those changes.
That answers Tim's second question. The first one, I guess, my question was whether, is there a definition of islands redevelopment in the plan, in the RMP?
There's a...
one shouldn't be different, if there is.
We'll make it consistent with the plan.
Okay.
We're not changing the plan.
Right. Right.
So we did Highlands, redevelopment areas means any land areas designated by the Highlands Council that are brownfields, gray fields, and or other previously developed areas that are within the Highlands region. And these procedures give a process for the approval of those.
So that just defines what a Highlands designated area is, as opposed to like the areas under DCA that go through the local housing and redevelopment laws.
Right, that's sort of the bare bones.
Yeah,
absolutely. I guess my understanding that this is new language anyway, so it's supposed to be a new language, so mm-hmm. we're already...
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, why was the sentence added?
The purple? It's in response to comments. Again, we tracked changes here to show how we incorporated comments.
I'd be more comfortable not putting in the purpose, because it seems to me it's starting to amend the plan in a way that could become substantive.
Do you want to just say redevelopment is to transform? Or
say whatever's in the plan.
Right.
Okay, why do we have to get into what the purpose of redevelopment is in the procedures of how you do it?
So we could take out purpose altogether and neither put Tim's nor of this, because Tim wanted an addition to this. So we take everything out?
I guess the thing that strikes me about the redevelopment stuff is that the whole conversation has been about the technical aspects of once you meet the 70% and once you're on a brownfield. We haven't talked about our goal of what we're trying to do in reaching those designations, right? We're making we're identifying where it's appropriate, but that's been all the language. And all I was trying to raise was why is it appropriate? And this language narrowed it. And I was a developer's attorney and we wanted to require TDR or something else, I'd make the argument that no, that's going to undermine the economic aspects of it. So I think if you take it all out, then we deprive ourselves of that guidance in our own decision making as we figure out how the compliance gets met. But should it be all out or expanded?
Okay.
they are saying, in accordance with smart growth principles, as are in the RMP, you'll find that sufficient.
It's like one of the squishier concepts out there.
We have to talk about something.
Well, I'm suggesting we think we should talk about
that. Well, we're going to get into the same thing in a minute with scenic resources and stuff. I don't think in that we talk about the purpose of protecting scenic resources. We're talking about the procedures of how you go about doing it, and the act and the plan say why we're doing it.
This is Optima. Where's it going to reside? Is this going to become part of our what?
It's going to be how we, when we start going through through designation of redevelopment areas, these will be our guiding principles.
So this isn't really going to be published anywhere?
Oh, everything we do is published somewhere. It will be used through implementation of the plan. There's so many different elements to that, and part of the implementation will be the designation of redevelopment areas. And so we need a procedure, just as we need a procedure to address WQMP amendments. Everything we do, we need a process so that everybody is treated equally. And I think this establishes a process. You say, that's good, and then we do that with anyone that comes in the door and says, you know, we're looking at redevelopment. We want to be designated, and we say, here are the procedures we go through.
Yeah. Well, we have a motion on the floor without an amendment. I mean, Tim made a suggestion which wasn't quite in the form of an amendment, so I don't know.
I was just going to suggest perhaps, I hear what Tim's saying, that we talk about redevelopment, but it's not in the context, the bigger context of planning and how we assume that this is going to be a magnet and that everything is going to be going into these redevelopment areas and it's going to save the areas around it. But that's not really spelled out. And perhaps we go into the purpose and scope portion rather than in the definition. Fleshed out there in some discussion about, that this is to be viewed, the brownfields and the redevelopment areas are to be viewed in the context of preserving those areas that are of environmental sensitivity. And I know we mention it in a few places that our goal is to, of course, not be at cross purposes with the resource protection standards of the RMP, but it's not central, it's not up front. And then also, when you read the smart growth definition, it sort of makes it sound like, okay, well, what that means is less environmental protection. And that's not really what we mean, I don't think. We mean, the standards will be lowered a bit in the redevelopment areas because they're already lower. And that is where we will attempt to renovate those problems by attracting growth that encompasses and is guided by our standards. So it's not so much that we're just redeveloping places and keeping them, an S. We're redeveloping it and making it better because we're using our RMP as the guidance about how to do that. So I don't think that's really clearly said here. Sorry about that. But I had my own question I wanted to bring up before we get too far along, and I know it's getting late, but just a question on
the addition.
We
didn't do water quality plan amendments, it would be new now.
I hear you.
John.
On the flow chart, I had a question. Now, we added that part of 70% of resources covered with impervious surfaces in the petition. But one thing that I want to make sure I understand, and I know when we discussed the default method, we used an example of how this would actually play out in terms of figuring out the areas and then the impervious, how you count up to find out if you do have 70%. So it seems as if under the first, in the flowchart under the first box to the right where it says 70% of area covered with impervious surface, if you've got a yes, then you've got, we move on, saying you've got a yes and it becomes possibly a redevelopment area. But the other one says 70% of multiple contiguous parcels. And is that what we mean, not areas? And what is that, how does that change? how we actually count up and figure out whether an area is 70%.
The example would be if you were in a town and you had a strip and there were contiguous parcels there, not necessarily under common ownership, and the town came in having talked to all the owners and they put that in as a redevelopment area, so it's 70% of that. That would be the entire area that you'd be working on, so that they wouldn't have to come in piecemeal and you could do a redevelopment plan for that.
Well, I get the contiguous part and mm-hmm. I totally support that, but the 70% of the parcel, are we saying it's 70% of the parcel and not the area, or is that just a miswording here?
It's never been just the parcel. Dan, you want to
I suggest that we change that to 70% of the area affecting multiple parcels. So if you're right on target, it is always a defined area that may not conform to parcel boundaries. But in this case, we were just trying to get at the issue of multiple parcels.
Right, and I get that part of it, and I totally support the contiguous part. But yeah, I think it's misleading, and we'll take
the language that Dan just gave. Is that okay, Tracy?
Yes, I think that would be better.
Okay.
And then just, you know, I know as we move forward, we're going to be implementing these. And we're going to get into the whole argument about what is impervious cover. And I just think that we have not really resolved those issues. And I think just a red flag that I think we're going to need to really grapple with the issue of how we, I know the definition here, you know, mm-hmm. is from the Act. And as we discussed this with Mr. Borden previously, and it's clear what it is. It's if it substantially impedes the recharge of.
I don't know if that's clear if you use the word substantially. It's back to being nearly pregnant.
Well, whatever the word is, but but we're going to be arguing about it, right?
Right.
Right. Exactly. And I think one of the things that I realized when we started going through this process is that by designating the area and then saying it's 70% of that area impervious, we're going to have a lot more redevelopment areas than if we said 70% of a parcel, for instance. So I think that, you know, how this plays out and how we implement it, we need to be very careful and aware of that as we move forward. And our decisions as a council in designating these areas, we have to realize how big a difference it will make if we're talking about 70% of an area versus 70% of a parcel.
And this is one of these are council actions, and this is the final action on these. Well, it's not the final because it goes through that two-step process, but those are decisions that you will be making as a group, and you'll see each of those individually as they come before you.
And just so we know, we have not addressed it here. This is a process. We haven't addressed those issues.
And it's done on a site-by-site basis.
I have a question. These definitions, are they the same as are in the plan?
Not necessarily, because we don't have to, they're not all in the plan. And just as you saw in Highlands, in the one that Tom called out, they could be different here because they're not, they won't be, they shouldn't be inconsistent.
Wait a minute, shouldn't they be consistent with the plan?
No, they won't be inconsistent.
They get an I?
They won't be inconsistent, but these are procedures. There are different terms that are needed to be addressed in here that aren't addressed necessarily in the plan. You take something that's in the plan and now you flesh it out in this, and it requires more definitions because we don't have to deal with it to that extent, and that will continue to be the case. But it's not inconsistent necessarily.
Mr. Chairman,
it's not inconsistent.
I would just like to say, based on that comment by Mimi and the discussion with Eileen just now, I agree. I think that these definitions don't have to be in exact blueprint of what's in the plan because these are procedures that we're using. And based on that, I would support the concept of Mr. Dillingham's amendment to change the definition to include the purpose that he suggested before under the definition of a Highlands redevelopment area.
So long as it's not inconsistent.
Yeah, I really think that if we define impervious surface here one way and differently in the plan, I think we're going to have problems.
Well, the impervious surface is consistent.
It's defined in the Act, and we won't make any definitions.
So you can't mess with that.
No, but we don't
mess
anything. We will be consistent in our approach and in our definitions, but not all the definitions will even be in the regional master plan. We need to do them as we go through the procedures.
Tim, you're...
So, if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, I'll offer that as a formal amendment.
Yeah, just say what it is.
So, I would offer that on page 3, the sentence of the purpose of redevelopment is to add at the end of the community concentrated growth, accommodate development which might otherwise occur from locations inconsistent with the RRP, and advance opportunities for affordable housing.
Mr. Wade, you're going to, Paul, could you be the sergeant at arms and get those two gentlemen in the hall?
Yeah. Well done, Paula.
Right.
You don't even have to get physical.
Please state your amendment.
Not all along.
So the amendment is on the language of the definition of Highlands redevelopment to add, and the purpose of redevelopment is to concentrate growth, accommodate development which might otherwise occur in locations inconsistent with RNP, and advance opportunities for affordable housing.
There's a second to that. Tracy, you sort of second
that. Yes, I second that.
Okay.
Yes.
Any further discussion on that?
Yes. Is that the only objective?
I really like it.
I don't think that's the only objective of redevelopment areas. Isn't it also to deal with some contaminated sites? Try and get them cleaned up in the process.
Right. Rebuild, restore,
right.
Or enhance.
Yeah, and that is in there.
Previously developed. Yeah. So.
But that's more important than.
Where would I find out what I just addressed? I didn't see it.
A process, Highlands redevelopment, a process to rebuild, restore, or enhance.
Right, I like that better.
Well, that's there.
Right, but I thought that Tim wanted to replace
no,
that.
No, no, he's not replacing, he's adding.
Oh.
I think less is more.
I agree. So we have an amendment, so is there more discussion on the amendment, or we can vote on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, we also have the added language to the flow chart.
Well, let's do this one first.
Okay.
So, all in favor of this amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
I'm opposed.
Aye.
Okay, so the amendment fails. I would look for an amendment to take out the purple sentence and give the purple sentence. Make that motion?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion of that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And then we have the other issue.
Which I'm sorry, can we do a quick roll call for those just for the record?
Okay.
And then the other, the suggestion Tim made on the chart, I think we seem to be accepting by acclamation, is my sense.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So we don't need amendments. So any other amendments? Any public comments on this process? Yes.
I just don't know the number of the resolution.
The number, well, they don't have numbers until we vote on them. So it's in our packet, it just says 2008, material out there, it says 2008-, and that's fine. But it's
number 13.
It's 13.
13. Okay. On the agenda is 13. Party. It's part of number 13 on the agenda.
Can I ask one question? What will trigger this process? Is it, will it all be coming from a developer, or will we?
Well, it could be a town coming in with it. It could be like we've already got a couple in front of us, a business currently within the preservation area that wants the opportunity for that redevelopment. We've got a couple of those. We've got a brownfield site that we've had discussions with already. We're not at a point of redevelopment of the designation. But, and a town may come with an area like that.
But we won't be recommending areas be developed for redevelopment.
I think we pretty much recommend all brownfield sites be.
Yes, sure. Thank you.
Are we ready to vote on this?
Yeah, we'll go.
Mr. Cullen, is it? Do you mind?
I do, but come on up.
You invited public comment.
I did. All right.
Thank you. My name is Mark Zakatansky from the New Jersey Highlands Coalition. A lot of public comments were received on these redevelopment procedures, and I recognize that this is the second round for the redevelopment procedures. I think there are significant concerns that were not addressed in the second round of the procedures. Most importantly is the input from the public. We're worried that these procedures look like Highlands Council is trying to assist applicants with identifying redevelopment areas and moving them forward without significant public input in that process. So there are a few places, and I'd like to go through it and point out some of the places where we feel the public should be more involved in this process. And we hope you can incorporate some of these suggestions before you pass a resolution. First and foremost, we welcome any changes to the Highlands redevelopment definition that include something along the lines of resource protection standards. I had actually noted some language that would say a process to rebuild, restore, or enhance a previously developed area that is appropriate for economic investment and community development in accordance with smart growth principles and resource protection principles in the regional master plan. So that's a small language suggestion I would encourage. Moving on to other definitions in the definitions section. The definition of impervious surface currently reads, any surface structure or improvement that reduces or prevents absorption of stormwater flow. I feel that that provides too much latitude, and the definition should be revised to say a structure. I think any structure implies that you have a lot of latitude in deciding that something either is or is not a structure, and that if it is a structure, then it's considered impervious off the bat. And that not necessarily all structures impede stormwater. So, additionally, the next definition, interested party, we feel that interested parties also involve the public and nonprofit organizations. Currently, the definition only includes applicants, people involved with a specific project, or the municipality or county where the project is currently located. We also feel that the public and nonprofits that are interested, potentially nonprofits, not just environmental, but also affordable housing nonprofits, if we're involved in a redevelopment area, we should be bringing in community groups to help shape what that redevelopment is going to look like. And if affordable housing is to be an integral component in a redevelopment area, then you should be bringing in nonprofits that work specifically in that field. That way, potentially, we could be getting 100% affordable sites, or we could be working with those municipalities so they're not forced into anything that isn't necessarily beneficial for the community. So we feel that the public should be involved as an interested party as well. Moving on, following the initiation of a redevelopment area, there are two opportunities for meetings. The first is a redevelopment area designation inquiry meeting. And it's recommended that a voluntary informal redevelopment area inquiry meeting take place. We, as the New Jersey Highlands Coalition, feel that this should be mandatory, and if an applicant is coming forward with an application to declare a redevelopment area or have it declared a redevelopment area, that the public should be informed of that, and they should be included in some sort of inquiry meeting so that all interested parties, community groups, nonprofits, environmental organizations, affordable housing groups, can all come to the table, and they can all provide their input. There's also a request for a pre-application meeting, but that application meeting doesn't have any public input as well. It's mentioned in the response to public comments that there could be proprietary information introduced during a pre-application meeting. I'm not sure what proprietary information could come up. I feel that all interested groups, including the public, should be invited to a pre-application meeting or the inquiry meeting so that all interested groups can have a chance to provide input in an application before it moves all the way forward to the council, so that we have a chance in the beginning to provide input. So moving on, once these meetings take place and a pre-application meeting takes place, one of the track changes that was incorporated into this set of redevelopment procedures says that a summary of the issues discussed at a pre-application meeting will be made available to the public. We don't necessarily feel like that's sufficient. We want to be at the table for the pre-application meeting, but also it would be much better if there were minutes of the meeting recorded or an audio recording. So that way, if there is proprietary information discussed, you could just withdraw that proprietary information and label it as such and just submit the minutes so we actually know what went on instead of just a summary. It's very difficult to understand what the applicant is proposing and what changes the council is suggesting. So we want to make sure that this council is working as hard as possible to make sure redevelopment procedures or the redevelopment process incorporates smart growth standards and incorporates certain resource protections that are consistent with your goals and policies. All right, moving on towards the end of the procedures, this is page 9 at the bottom, section E, says the Highlands Council staff may share with the applicant the draft recommendations prior to presenting the recommendations to the council. So that way you guys can make recommendations to the applicant on how to make their application consistent with these procedures. We feel that any recommendations you make should also be released to the public so that we can provide public input as well. So if the applicant is allowed to go back to the drawing board and make changes to their procedures, then perhaps there's an opportunity for the environmental community and other nonprofits to chime in as well. So that way, there's a truly transparent process where every one of these applications is fully vetted by the council ahead of time, the council staff, and the public. So that's really what we're looking for. We're looking for procedures that are transparent, and we feel like some opportunity for the public to provide input before we're sitting here at the table and there's an application in front of you and you either vote up or down. We'd like to provide input from the beginning of the process. So that's the extent of my comments, and we look forward to providing public input on all redevelopment applications in the future. Thank you.
Other public comments? You ready to vote on this?
Can we get another seconder? Janice seconded this motion and left.
Oh, okay. Someone else have to second the motion?
I'll second.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Any abstentions? We have 18. Is that Tracy too? So 1, 2, 3, 4. 5. 6. We don't have to reconsider this next meeting.
Is Scott there?
Scott, are you here? Scott? So I assume the same thing might happen with the resources. So we'll meet again tomorrow to pick these up.
And any other WQMVs that might have come in overnight?
Right. We can listen to public comments without a quorum. So are there any members of the public who would like to speak?
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. My comments are particular to your reviews of the water quality management plans. We very much like the checklist, and we really applaud the staff's use of the checklist. It is very helpful to members of the public to see and understand your reasoning. However, I just want to make sure that there is a process in place, there's even a process in place, to handle these that's easy for you and easy for the public. I think that the public will sometimes want to come in and review documents that you have here. I don't know how you want to set this up, but if it were the way, a simple process that everybody understood, so we could come in. I know that it's could be staff intensive, and you know when we go to DEP to review documents at DEP, there is no staff member hovering over our shoulder. But obviously, it has to be a process that you are comfortable with, that the public understands, and that you aren't getting lots of simple to understand. The notice, which also was brought up by Helen, the notice of how we know that there are reviews being put online. We knew about all of the reviews because of the earlier meeting at which it was announced that all the stuff was going to be available ahead of time, and we could make public comments, and we had to get our public comments in by the 8th of September. And we really welcome that. It was very helpful to us, and we are delighted to see that there were changes that were made as a result of public input. So that was great, but we had no idea that the Trump application had been sent in. So, in fact, we thought earlier assured that Trump was not going to be on the agenda today. So that was a surprise to us. We applaud what you said in your review, but I think there's got to be a process for getting this straight. And that was all my comments for today. Thank you very much. But
thank you.
We really like the process. So.
Thank you.
Elliot Rubin, New Jersey Highlands Coalition, and I offer this following suggestion to help make the RMP friendlier to all users. And maybe 2 years from now when the staff actually would have the time to consider this. And that would be a map that outlines each of the 183 sub-watersheds in the Highlands and identifies them by their hydrologic, a map that does so, identifying them by their hydrologic unit code. By providing such a cross-reference, one would have a geographic reference to the water availability table in the technical report addenda, and a better geographic orientation as to the opportunities and limitations on projects, municipalities, and counties per the land use capability series of maps. For example, looking at halfway between Interstate 80 and 78, there's a shaded medium blue huck bordered north and south by green huck 14s. I cannot tell what sub-watershed that is. So So something to consider. Secondly, the regional master plan does not specify what, if any, follow-up or further actions are required of after the council has made a consistency determination. However, in both the basic plan conformance and the plan conformance documents that were included in the information package sent to all Highlands municipalities earlier this month, conforming municipalities are instructed to amend application checklists to include the following language, quote, for non-exempt development applications having received a consistency determination indicating that specific revisions are required to achieve consistency, a certification from the applicant's professional affirming that the plans have been revised and specifically addressed the inconsistencies identified by the Highlands Council, and to the best of his or her professional knowledge, they have achieved consistency. I'm not sure which consistency determination that's in reference to, but is that it? Consistency determinations are based on interpretation somewhat of policy and facts. It is not a stretch to anticipate that an applicant may interpret policies and objectives quite differently than the council or the staff. A tweak in a site plan may accomplish a threshold for achieving the applicant's threshold for achieving consistency, but upon further scrutiny by the council, that tweak may be found to be entirely inadequate in correcting what the council had found to be inconsistent. If it is entirely up to the applicant to police its adherence to the policies and objectives of the regional master plan, the council's own consensus-based and thoughtful judgments will be repurposed at the pleasure of special interests. The results could be devastating. The public has every reason to expect that projects found inconsistent with the RMP will be corrected to the satisfaction of the council, and only after the project plans have been resubmitted, preferably in digital format, of course, and judged by the council and not by the applicant to be consistent per the council's initial intent and findings. I certainly don't rule out the possibility that the language I have processed is not in sync with the council's intent, and such is the case, I welcome your clarification. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments?
My name is David Shope. I'm also a member of the public. So Julia Summers does not speak for me. First, let me get back to your budget. This is an inadequate budget. This is just headings with no subheadings, with no breakdown of the dollar amounts. So if I were to submit something like this to IRS, they'd put me in jail. So I would like a more complete listing of the budget with all the subcategories listed under the main categories, as is the custom. Getting back to Resolution 11A, I want to note that a septic design requires, I believe, 200 gallons just because you're building a house, and 150 gallons for each bedroom. I think that's correct. And here we have 300 gallons per house, which means you got three quarters of the person in that house, judging by the septic flow from it. There's no explanation as to how these numbers came up. It's an inadequate analysis of this particular application, and I feel sorry for these homeowners because they will be restricted to any further increase of their home in terms of adding additional bedrooms or whatever. They will just be put at a tremendous disadvantage compared to their neighbors for a peculiarity of the particular water and sewer system in this community, no fault of their own. And something's the matter with a process that allows this kind of stuff to happen. If I were them, and if they had the money, which I'm sure they don't, I'd be yelling 14th Amendment. The imposition of a deed restriction because of this oddity is totally unfair to these property owners. I don't know them. I don't know who they are. But it's an indication of the rather Soviet-style imposition of a really peculiar laws. I've never seen anything like this before. Maybe it's because I haven't lived in the Highlands, I don't know. But I live in the Highlands, have since 1965, and I'm now coming to regret it.
Good afternoon. Monique Purcell, New Jersey Department of Agriculture. Just wanted to put a couple of things on your radar screen because I know you don't have enough going on. The Water Quality Management Plan amendment process, which I'm a little confused about, primarily because of EO 114. I know right now they're kind of coming in piecemeal. Like today you talked about, you know, two houses and need an amendment. But now that the Water Quality Management Planning rules were adopted in July, they're now requiring county plans. So I guess you'll be reviewing county plans, which will obviously be a much more comprehensive review than, you know, looking at a, you know, project by project. And then it's also my understanding that once those county plans are adopted, there won't be such a specific or project-specific amendment process, because it's going to be based upon build-out and be based upon nitrate dilution and other factors that will basically just give you a county plan. And you can kind of, I think I understand, have some flexibility within that county plan. So my questions are a couple. What would then be considered an amendment? Once those plans are adopted, then what's an amendment? Because the amendment is what would trigger EO 114, right? And then second, of course, the water conservation management plans are critical to develop those, because that'll be yet another barrier to being able to actually implement your plan. So I just want to go on record to say that I'm very confused, and I'm sure we all are, but just want to kind of talk about that out loud, because it's helpful for me personally. So just trying to figure how this is all going to work, and I'm thinking that, you know, based upon the earlier discussion about how you want to review these WQMPs, I'm just thinking it's going to be an enormous task. I'm not sure how it's going to happen. So I guess I'll stay tuned. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Joy Farber, the Chief Counsel for the Office of Smart Grow. Wanted to show up and thank Lean and Tom for presenting on the Regional Master Plan to the State Planning Commission yesterday. I don't know if they conveyed to you that the Commission was impressed and complimentary toward all of the extensive work that you've done, and they felt that the plan had a lot of good information. As you know, we've received the petition for plan endorsement, and we are gearing up to endorse the plan. What I wanted to do today is to just acknowledge we've received the petition, we are gearing up, and as Monique said, stay tuned. With respect to EO 114, Tom and Eileen mentioned that you're going to be preparing a letter to municipalities on implementing that. And then it may go out on Monday. But I was hoping, in the interests of interagency cooperation, that we could, you know, be involved with looking at the letter. I think it's going to impact both municipalities that are already working with us in plan endorsement, who are Highlands Region municipalities, but also your petition. And I would like to be able to be familiar with it and perhaps weigh in on what a reasonable extension of time periods might be, and some concerns about growth share and how the growth share methodology is going to be used in the plan. So if that would be possible, I greatly appreciate it and look forward to reviewing your plan and seeing its consistency determination move along.
Our next meeting is scheduled for October 16th at 4 in the afternoon. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I have one thing before we adjourn. It's only to state something for the record. I dropped my phone before we voted on the budget, so I didn't actually. I was calling in earlier. I just, for the record, I just want to. I want to register my vote on the budget as an abstain.
Okay. Is your vote aye or nay?
Aye.
Okay. We're adjourned.
So where are we going to meet, personnel committee?
We have a personnel committee. Yes, but I'll ask for the speech.
Who's saying here, John?
Me too.